Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Montoya, and we're back. You know, just like yesterday, we were on. Had Alex Ariza, you know, Marcito Gesta on the phone talking to us about particular things. Alex Ariza had given us a great interview mentioning about the mishaps that happened with Amir Khan. And Marcito Gesta and his manager, Vince Parra, coming on the show, talking about their upcoming fight that's happening in San Francisco, War of the Wharf, tomorrow night on Solo Boxeo. I don't know if anybody caught on to this. You know, I wrote an article about this today and posted it up about Eloy Perez. And you know what? I haven't even posted the Marcito article, so nobody could catch wind of it. So my apologies there. You know, but Gable had texted me late at night and said, hey, who's Marcito going to fight now? Because on BoxRec, the original opponent, you know, who he was supposed to be facing Friday, has now turned into a TBA, which is to be announced. So immediately I did contact Vince Parra, and he had said, you know what, as what do we know at this moment, he said, we're still on with
Trezankos,
okay? His first name, Gabe, was
Genaro.
Genaro Trezankos. And he said, we're still on for that guy, but he said, you know what? I would not object to them, the commissioner, to say, let's not follow through with that fight. Let's get another opponent, just because of the fact that Marcito had knocked him out, you know, just last year in 7 rounds. And he goes, you know, the thing is that this is a different no mercy. He's bigger, he's stronger, and he's more polished. From the last time they had met in Arizona. And he's like, I'm going to be honest with you, Dave. I don't want ring death in my hands. I don't want blood on the hands of my fighter. We don't want that on our conscience. He goes, I have to stress this numerous times, and I'm telling you, and please tell your audience, and you know, I'm going to post a whole article about this and really break it down about this whole situation for Friday night, you know, is that he goes, we're asking who's going to be the referee for this fight. Who's going to ref this fight? Because he wants to make sure that he has a conversation with the commissioners there and the ref, stating to them, please make sure the ref is keeping a close eye on Genaro because of the fact that he doesn't want this kid to get punished more than what he needs to, you know, do. You know, we don't want to see this guy be damaged goods. I mean, in all honesty, he shouldn't be fighting at all. You know, how the state commission has let this on bikes, we don't know. Just like numerous things that the state commission of California has done plenty of letting things walk on by, you know, we could make an 8-hour show about the mistakes and the incompetence the commissioners have done throughout boxing. I mean, it's ridiculous. But here you have Marcito Gesta, who is at no fault, and neither is his manager, about picking the opponent that needs to be in front of them. Okay? Yes, you can say, well, they did take the fight, Dave. Yeah, they did take the fight. But they're being very aware of it, and they're very cautious about it, and they're being vocal about it. Let's be honest here. They're not selling us BS. And he even stated last Thursday on the show, he said, look, fight fans are not stupid, and the hardcore fight fans are going to see the writing on the walls. This guy's just there to make Marcito look good for the Filipinos in San Francisco. Hey, we understand that. But really, on all honesty, on whose cost and whose body, if you don't see Genaro walk out of that ring Friday night. I don't know, Gabriel. Am I being a little harsh on this? Mitch match. Not it's not just on the Marcito fight. We're talking about Eloy Perez's fight with Speedy Gonzalez and pretty much every fight kind of down the line on Friday night, which I'll be attending. So if you are the promoter or you guys are the people that are pushing this fight and you want to punch me in the face when you see me ringside in San Francisco, go right ahead. But I'm not going to change what I'm saying. I really think that we need to take a closer look into our sport because it is really, in all honesty, we're looking to see a death in the ring by putting in these warriors that are really honestly need to hang up their gloves and walk away.
Yeah, no, you're not being harsh at all. I mean, let's just take a look at some of the upcoming fights that are happening here. You know, next week, I mean, you pretty much covered that card really well. And I wrote about this this subject last week in a piece that, you know, it took a little time to catch on. A piece called "Who's Minding Boxing Store," and I talked about a lot of the mismatches that are happening. And what was worse,
a great article, by the way, Gabriel, was a great article.
I appreciate that.
You know,
the fight that happened last week, the Fidel Maldonado Jr. fighting Carlos Hernandez, who's a last minute sub. Guy had been knocked out a few times. He got stopped, I believe, in two rounds. After the fight, according to a source of mine that talked to people that were there at the fights, some of the inspectors, he began talking strangely. He said talking weirdly in the post-fight examination and not making fun of him at all. It was like he was slurring his words and not making any sense. They had to rush him to the hospital. And speaking to a doctor, not on the scene, but just to someone, another source, that's brain damage. It was immediate brain damage. I haven't been able to get a hold of the Hernandez camp to see if he's okay yet. But I imagine that's not, you know, just, you know, you go see Dr. Shah High and get fixed up. You know, this is a really serious matter. And then you look to the next card, the Fight Night Club, that's going to be happening next week, February 24th. Jamie Kavanaugh, good young fighter, is on the rise right now. He's 4-0 with two knockouts. He'll be fighting Ramon Flores. Ramon Flores is 3-10, with six of those 10 knockout losses. He has two draws. He has not won a fight in seven fights. He's been knocked out. Two out of those losses. He hasn't had a string of wins, meaning in a row ever in his career. He was knocked out by Brandon Rios in his first fight in 2005. Had a win, then a draw, then a win, then two knockout losses in a row, another loss, then he got a win in 2009, then he went on a five-fight losing streak where he got knocked out twice in that losing streak. Then he had a draw in 2010, and then he's another loss to start out this year, January 28th, over in Pachanga. He lost to an undefeated fighter. Now he's fighting Jamie Kavanaugh on Fight Night Club. It'll probably be a televised fight. Why the hell are we seeing this? He's a 30-year-old man who clearly, boxing is not for you, man. You're clearly not, an elite guy. You're never going to be even that much of a mid-level guy. This isn't even in third tier. This is fourth tier. This is ring death waiting to happen. There's several other fighters on the card. One in particular, Ricardo Malfovan. And that's another one. This guy turned pro last year in March. He's been knocked out twice in a row, first in March, and over in California, in Tustin. What's odd about it is that he got knocked out in March 5th. Now, you're supposed to get 90-day suspension when you get knocked out. And this wasn't a TKO.
Right.
This was a KO.
Right.
And it was his pro debut. But instead of that, the Nevada Commission sanctioned him to fight April 30th against Frankie Gomez. He got knocked out in two rounds. And then he sat until September 30th, where he fought Jamie Kavanaugh at the Fight Night Club, lost a decision, came back in December, lost another decision in Ontario. And now here he is back again. He's going to be fighting a 2-1 fighter on the Fight Night Club card. How the hell are these guys getting through? And, again, if the California Commission would like to come on this show or even just simply answer my phone calls, which have been numerous,
maybe they
would be able to answer
right.
that question.
I know, and people are out right now, Aztec, we've called them, brother. Trust me, I've even went up to Che, who's the lead guy for the California State Commission, Athletic Commission and asked them personally and given them my card to say, hey, listen, love for you to answer some questions, come on live with us, maybe clear this up or make us understand what is the route, what is the position that you really have in making these decisions. How are you guys sitting around and counseling each other and educating each other into making these crucial decisions that really, yeah, honestly have, you know, they basically handling lives in their hand. They're playing God, you know. Let's be honest here. That's what
that's the
doing.
Thing. And, you know, to the Aztec guy or whatever in our forum, if you read my article, Who's Minding Boxing Store, that's how it opens. This article would be about the ins and outs of how these things work, but I listed five people in that article who, you know, from Don Chargan, who was a co-promoter on that card last weekend. We'll be co-promoting this card this weekend, the Gesta card. Eric Gomez over at Golden Boy. I left messages with these people. They did not call me back. I left multiple messages with and I emailed to try to get a hold of Gomez. They contacted me about 10 minutes before I went to press, because I was on a timeline. But I've got a hold of George Dodd, who runs the California Commission, and Che Guevara. I left messages multiple times with them, both on their voicemail and with the secretary, saying this needs to be addressed. And I told them exactly what I was calling about. It wasn't just give me a call sometime. It was, you know, this is what's going on, and I really need you to talk to me. Nobody called me back. I even called Telefutura and said, you're going to be airing a possible ring death. You guys need to give me a call. They didn't call me back. So, you know, a writer can only go so far. I mean, it just shows that if people don't call you back, you can still write an article. And I'm going to continue to, with the commitment I'm making to the fighters and to the sport of boxing, I will continue to keep writing these and pointing them out every week, letting you guys know this is the weekly mismatch. This is the problem. Now, on the other end, developing prospects, which is what, you know, Telefutura card, the solo, or as Carlos Acevedo calls it, solo boxeo, which is, I wish I wrote that line. There's a certain thing that, you know, you've got to develop your prospects against lesser guys. I get that. Some
yes,
guys
you
are
do.
Actually better than their records, you know. Some guys are road warriors. But at the same time, some of these guys, you know, there was a report that the Association of Boxing Commissions came out with. They put it on Fight Facts. And most people look at BoxRec, which is what I'm thinking that the California Commission is doing. They look at BoxRec, kind of see a record, and go, oh, that works. But what Fight Facts is the at least in the U.S., it's the official record keeping for all the commissions. So when a fight happens, they have to register with Fight Facts. And some of the records, if you go to Fight Facts, and you have to pay to get some of the records, they're different than what's on BoxRec. On Fight Facts, there was actually a fight of Hernandez's that was missing. That he'd actually had been stopped and then had another fight that they mentioned and the reason he was stopped in this fight was lack of conditioning. And it was recommended to the commission through one of my sources that this guy not be allowed to fight, not just because he wasn't that good of a fighter, which was pretty apparent, but because his conditioning was poor. He was tired after the first round. They quit after three rounds because he was so exhausted. He couldn't even finish a four-round fight. And yet here he is being shown on your TV.
Wow.
Why is that? But here was the worst part, was this report that the ABC came out with. In the final 6 months of 2010, 28 fighters who were suspended fought in the United States in multiple commissions. Nine of those fighters that were suspended should not be fighting, suspended for various reasons, fought in California. You tell me, why the hell is this happening? I have no idea. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal.
It's sad to say the least about what and how they're building up particular fighters. And, you know, like you said, yes, you have to build them. You have to build your fighters with confidence. But do you have to put in a fighter with practically an IV in their arm? Can we not get them before they're ready to be sent to the morgue? You know,
The thing is, they don't go to the gyms. You know, you and you go to the gyms. I go to the gyms, and you know, Blue Mercury, that crew, really hits all the gyms. If you ask every trainer and everybody that's in there. When's the last time you saw an inspector come through here to check out one of these opponents, much less the top-level fighters, to see what their conditioning is, how they're making weight, all that stuff? They'll all tell you, never. They never come. So how are they supposed to know if these fighters are any good? I mean, Che Guevara, the guy that approved a fight that we saw at Maywood, this guy was like 0-2. He'd fought, well, he turned pro in 2004, got knocked out in 1, took 5 years off, came back last December, got knocked out in 3, so he improved, I guess. And then here he is again fighting a few months later, and
right.
He loses, and he looked shell-shocked. Poor guy at 0-2 looked absolutely shot, you know, didn't want to engage, was all skittish. And Guevara was not there to see his handiwork, to see this fighter that he approved, who looked clearly like he didn't belong in the ring. That's a problem.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Guevara, Che Guevara, is that, you know, we name our particular fighters sometimes with a very catchy and rightfully good nickname because they earned it. And Che has really earned the nickname The Ghost, because the guy's never really there to be found to ask any questions when the shit hits the fan, you know? And, you know, you sit here and you wonder, how do you sleep at night? How does this guy sleep at night knowing that he's putting in lives at risk when they step in the ring? Now, you know, as a fight fan, the reason why I fell in love with this sport is because of the two warriors going in and practically leaving everything on one particular night, okay? It's the closest thing that you're going to see hell when you live. Okay, you know, that's the best way you can describe, you know, a square ring, a square circle, a stage of drama that's just going to have a full mixture of different feelings, you know, from drama to pride to honor to nationalism. Everything's going to fit in one. And at the same time, you're really witnessing a piece of that person being chipped away, a life being chipped away. Our fighters, eventually, their bodies don't function when they retire as well as you would be if you didn't play into that sport, if you didn't get yourself involved in a physical sport. Normally, if you hit 50 or above 50, you're still going to be coherent. You're still going to be able to interact. And I've seen older men that have never been in that type of wear and tear type of sport, you know, look like they're in their 30s. But you look at particular fighters, and one fighter comes into mind who I idolize and watch when I was a kid and, you know, would sit down and watch him and buy his stuff and read about him was Bobby Chacon, the schoolboy. I met him, and it was just so sad to sit there. And this guy, from a guy that lived the toughest and the roughest throughout his whole career, even witnessing his wife taking her life because she didn't want him to step back into the ring, you know, mark that she had some mental issues and stuff, but he gave so much to walk away with practically having maybe a fraction left of what used to be him, which is his sense of humor.
Oh,
and you have to thank guys like Che, you know, the California State Commissioners. You have to thank these guys who probably allowed guys like Bobby Chacon, who had a lot of pride and knew nothing more but to get themselves back into the ring. You have to thank guys like Che, who just didn't know how to do their jobs and say no. Our job is to protect you.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I just don't. I remember I ran into Bobby. You were there too at the Chris Areola fight, you know, against Adamek. And you know, I walked by and someone grabbed me and said, "Hey, I'd like you to meet Bobby Chacon. You know, he's here tonight, and could you talk to, you know, could you grab the promoter and bring him over, and you know, we'd like to have him, you know, bring him into the ring and like present him to everybody." And I was
right.
Like, "I'd love to meet Bobby Chacon," and I couldn't understand a thing he said. You know,
it
just broke my heart.
We went to dinner
know,
with
just,
him. You know,
yeah,
we went to dinner with him, and I got to tell you, man, I'm sitting there, and I'm literally, you know, you don't want to be rude or anything, and you're smiling and you're nodding your head, but I'm like looking over at my partner, and I'm like, what the hell did he just say right now? Like, I literally could not understand a word he was saying. Let me tell you this, Gabe. I even interviewed him and put it on video, but I had, you know, the thing is that I love this sport unconditionally. You know, you have to have a love and hate with this sport of boxing. Okay, it's a marriage. You know what I mean? When you get pissed off at the old lady, and then you can make up. That's pretty much what boxing is to me. Okay, I'm gonna get so pissed at it that I have to put it down or walk away for a minute, but I'm right back. It's an addiction. You know, either it doesn't matter if you're a fighter or a witness. It's an addiction. You're gonna come back. And I sat there, and I'm watching, you know, watching them, and I'm filming them, and I'm really thinking, seriously, am I going to post this up and allow some of these immature kids that know nothing about boxing and all they do is troll around, make fun of a legend? No. And I never posted that video.
Yeah, you just, you know, I mean, I always think back to the, and somebody mentioned it on Twitter when my article came out, and it was interesting that it wasn't a lead story, you know. It was kind of something. It took me a while to kind of develop the story through the week, and we'd already slotted out our leads, and Steve had the lead that night, and so I put it underneath. And I think sometimes people just kind of look at the not headline articles and go, ah, you know, and they kind of skip it. And it didn't really have a title that really zinged, you know. I should have called it Mismatch City or something. And
yeah,
you know, but. After the fight, my source called me and told me what had happened to poor Hernandez. Nobody had reported it.
Wow.
And so I reposted the article on Twitter and then added that he was taken away. That I actually said in the article, this is a ring death or a tragedy waiting to happen. And sure enough, we got it. And we're really, you know, if you look at the card that's coming up, you know, the guest card and the Fight Night Club card, this stuff, it's only getting worse, you know, and you just kind of look at it and you wonder. And what's interesting, too, is that when you look at these cards, some of these guys have, you know, one thing in common. And I hate to point somebody out and trash them, but Frankie Gomez, Jamie Kavanaugh, you know, and then Fight Night Club, this is a Golden Boy card. These guys are being recycled by the same promoter over and over again,
right,
to fight their young prospects. And, you know, one, yeah, you got to develop your fighter, but okay, what are they learning by blowing guys out? I mean, you see in Frankie Gomez, you know, his first few fights, he's just blowing dudes out in like a minute. You know, guys that just looked like, you know, they could be waiting for the bus, and some guy just ran up and started hitting them and knocking them out. And then, you know, then you see him kind of stepping it up against guys like, you know, his last couple fights, you know, Ramon Montano and Jose Lugo, his last two fights over at Fantasy Springs. And he went the distance, and you can kind of see, you know, here's a guy with about 10 fights, and there's some skills missing. He's got like 8 fights.
Right.
You know, and he's fighting now like a guy that's what, 6-6, you know, and in his next fight over at the Honda Center. And this is another one of those usual suspect guys. And you go, what is he really getting out of this? He's fighting a guy that's been knocked out in 2 of his last 3 fights. I mean, you know, what's the point of that? You know, I mean,
well,
I understand,
you know,
like James Kirkland, you know, he's coming back after 2 years, but Frankie fights often.
Right.
You know?
And, but, you know, the thing is this, is that we have not been shy about it, and I've been vocal about it. I've always said that Golden Boy just does not know how to match make their fighters correctly, that they put him in with softies for so long that when they finally need to pay the bill to show that they're the real deal, There's a speed bump. They just can't seem to jump over. It's not even a hurdle, you know. And
right.
And you know, and these mistakes could be all because of a maturity level that this is a very newly promotional company, but a promotional company with some great backings already. You know what I'm saying? This is a hurry up company, and yes, they hurried up. They got HBO. They got dates. They got TV dates. They got, you know, Telefuturo. They have a lot of dates. And I understand you're new. You're new in the business of promotion. But guess what? The way you're marketing yourself, it looks like you've been around for a long time. I mean, in all respect, you guys are in the same brand of top rank. But the way you market and the way you conduct business does not equal. You need to play catch up, and you need to do it right away, because this is like, you know, like you're saying, Gabe, this is just getting worse. And guess what? Fight fans, like the way Vince Parra said, we're not stupid. We could see the writing in the walls, you know. Anyways,
right.
Anyways, really quick, you know, just to make an announcement, we got a good show for you guys tonight. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Got some great fights happening this weekend. You know, really stoked up about Fernando Montiel and Nonito Dornier finally mixing it up Saturday night, you know. And then we got Andy Lee and Emmanuel Stewart that we should be calling in a couple more minutes. And then a little later, Victor Ortiz had a lot to say. From Berto to Khan to Brandon Rios. It's something you're not going to want to miss in here. I mean, when we talk about a new Victor Ortiz, we're talking a new Victor Ortiz. For a minute, I had to check his number to see, is this the same dude? I mean, this doesn't sound like Victor. This sounded like a completely different person. You know, I thought I was talking to another homeboy from San Jose Barrios, man. That's what I thought. Not
yeah.
a surfer dude.
Yeah.
You know, far from a surfer guy that Brandon Rios has, you know, chatted on the show. But going back, man.
Yeah,
really,
I was surprised, dude. I was like, wow, he
yeah.
was talking to me, you know. And it was more like he wasn't talking trash. He was just like, it's this time. I'm going to, you know, he took some time to himself, kind of figured out what he really wanted and said, you know what, here we go. You know, let the good times roll. Let the good fights happen and let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, I respect that. Now, there's a lot of people dogging that fight. I think Ortiz versus Berto is a hell of a fight. And I've said it for years. And we talked about it in the interview. You look at his body. And this was probably, I got to say, 3 years ago when I first got to L.A. and I was covering Margarito right before he was getting ready to fight Paul Williams, I believe. Or it might have been right before he fought Cintron the second time. But anyways, I was at the, you know, Police Athletic League, the Snake Pit, you know, Sergio Mora's gym out in Montebello. And Ortiz happened to be in there working out too. And I was like, that kid is not a 140-pounder. He's
right.
He's a full-on middle, you know, a welterweight waiting to happen. And I was really surprised, you know, that he stayed at 140 as long as he did. And if I've talked to Berto multiple times in person and Victor, and you don't really see much of a size difference. Victor is a very big dude.
I mean, you know, Victor is a little bit slimmer, but he has big shoulders, you know, and he height-wise, he definitely has, you know, and I even wondered at one time whether or not Victor could stay at 140, you know, mentioned to him way, way back. But he, you know, he's always said, hey, I don't have problems making weight, you know, but just like I don't have problems making 147 either. Berto, I really honestly, how does he fit himself to be 147? To me, Gabe,
no,
he looks more of a 154, I mean, at least 152, you know. He's all around comfortable at. It's not a whole lot of pounds, but 5 pounds is a lot for a fighter to shed down and stuff, if that's the case. But Berto himself has even told us numerous times, you know what, I don't have a problem making weight. This fight is a good matchup, you know. In terms of a lot of things, people questioning both warriors, where their heart is at. You have Berto that does more of his talking on Twitter, and you have Victor, who has done more of his talking with his running shoes. And both people, fight fans, have been questioning, do these guys deserve the publicity they've been given? And I apologize if I sound like I'm underneath the water or if I'm in Mars, guys. I don't know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it sounds good to me. It's where I'm from.
It does sound a little underwaterish. I gotta tell you. I don't know. Maybe it's the headset or something. But
huh.
I blame AT&T every time.
Well, you know, I'm using Skype, and I don't know. What the hell? What the helio? Anyways, you know, going back to Victor here is, to me, this is a world fight for either guy. You know, one guy brings boxing skill with good feet work. His feet are a little bit quicker than the other guy. Another guy brings a little bit more pressure with good hand speed. But you can't take nothing away from Victor. He does have good hand speed as well. I like his hand speed. But he's more of a distance guy. He needs that length. He needs that distance in order to really use his hand speed. Well, Berto, to me, he likes to close that distance, and he's in the pocket with distance, with speed. He's in the pocket with speed. And that, to me, counts a little bit more, because when you're in that pocket, Gabriel, it's very difficult to see the punches coming from underneath you when they're going to land. And that's going to be the telling. There's a lot of questions that are going to be answered the night when those two step into the ring. I'm really looking forward to this fight.
Yeah, no, I think it's both guys have certain flaws. You know, people question the chin, people question the heart, but the skills are there. They're both solid fighters. You know, they have some, you know, certain deficiencies. I don't think that Berto is as comfortable fighting at mid range. Or really more at close range as Victor is. You know, I think Victor can get in close and does some of his better work at that mid-range level, whereas Berto is a little more long range. And I think it's going to be either really kind of a – if they do take it inside, you know, I see a lot of clinches. But at the same time, yeah, I just think that the strengths and the flaws of both of them are really going to complement each other well. And it's going to make for a good fight. And I think as the promotion goes along, we're going to see a little bit of bad blood, and these guys are really going to want to get after each other. I talked to Berto probably 3 weeks ago. He was in L.A. for the WSB fight. And we talked to ringside, and he seemed really excited. He really wanted the fight, really liked the fight, and felt that Victor was a legitimate challenge, and that he would be able to take the 147 limit, you know, just fine. Although this fight isn't at the 147 limit, it's a catch weight, at, I believe 145 plus 1 pounds, meaning, you know, it's probably going to be 146
right.
pounds. But even that said, you know, it's still a hell of a fight. And
even
just,
that
I
said, I mean that 1 pound there, I don't know if it's going to make a big difference. It may make a. It could weigh either way for each fighter and stuff. It could affect Berto and it could affect Victor. But you know what? Let's call in our first guest here. Let's see if they answer the phone. We're going to be calling in Andy Lee. Emmanuel Stewart should be with Andy Lee, or else we have to call in Emmanuel Stewart. But either way, we'll get both of these guys on the line here on Leave It in the Ring.
We'll just call Steve and have him do his best Andy Stewart impersonation.
He could probably trick Andy Lee to believing it. It's really him. He can describe, you know.
Well, this is Andy. Please leave a message and your number and name, and I'll get back to you. Thank you.
All right. Let's call him back. And he's not answering. He probably doesn't recognize
the number.
The number. If not, we'll call Emmanuel, and hopefully we get a hold of him. Try him one more time really quick here on Leaving the Ring. There's always something up. Either I'm underwater or being drowned, or I'm just not answering the phone. Either way, you get entertained on Leave the Ring. If you have a chance, chop up the beer, man. Relax. When we do open up the phone lines, call in, chop it up with us, and tell us who you think is going
to
win.
Hello, this is Andy.
Saturday night.
Message,
who do you think is
going to
win, Andy?
Name, and I'll get back to you. Thank you.
Let's call. Let's give Emmanuel Stewart a try and see what he. See if he's around. You got to sing a tune, man, behind me, you know? So there's no dead time, no dead air.
Sorry, yeah. if you want to join us in the chat room, too, it's heating up in there, man. We got like 19 users right now hanging out there talking some trash, talking the fights. You can also listen to the show at the same time if you're interacting. For some weird reason, Blog Talk's not letting me log in. It's annoying.
Let's see.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice
automatic
message.
Automatic voice message.
3133.
Oh. Yeah.
It won't click. What's going on here? Let's give them a try. If not, we'll tell Red they're not answering so that Red can get a hold of them.
Your call has been forwarded.
Through an automatic voice message system.
Let's see here. Come on. Like I said, if you want to call in. If you want to call in, you can go right ahead, chop it up with this here over here on Leaving the Ring. The number is 347-215-7598, and you can let us know who you think is going to win Saturday night between the Flash and Montel. Philippines versus Mexico. It should be a great fight. I'm hoping that we're going to get a great fight out of them because, I don't know, man. I'm having this huge feeling that Montel is going to have a lot of problems with Dornier. The speed and the power that Nonito has been bringing and the confidence, man. That kid is just, you talk about some confidence, you know. I mean, even though I'm a little worried, Gabriel, about that confidence that he's kind of having with this fight, I mean, he's over singing and dancing and doing Michael Jackson moves and everything. And I'm like, dude, this is not the American Idol. You're going in against a real tough customer here, a guy that can really change the fight with one punch.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching tape all week, and you really, you look at that Hasegawa fight, and he was getting dominated really for the first three rounds of that fight. And a lot of people, myself included, felt that Hasegawa was arguably the best 118-pounder in the world. Really tough matchup, southpaw, speedy guy, a little bit bigger, and just, you know, all around not an easy fight. And if you look at that fourth round, Montiel starts to get to him a little bit, starts to figure him out. And I think really the key there, though, was that Hasegawa kind of abandoned his jab a little bit. And really, at first he was kind of sticking it, then he started taking that away, and it became lazy. And sure enough, you know, Montiel found his way in, went right after him, and the rest is history. And so I think in that, you know, there's a lot to be learned for Donaire, and that, you know, he may be the bigger guy, he may be the faster guy, but he's really going to need to stay very technical and really kind of not forget for a second that the guy he's in with, all he needs is one punch. He lands one punch, and you're dazed for a second, and there are very few people in this sport who finish as well as Fernando Montiel. And if you allow him to get you in that position, it's going to be over really fast. And so I think Bonera, I'm personally picking him to win by decision, because I just think that for him to win, taking risks is not going to be the thing to do. I think, if he does get a stoppage, it's going to be a late-round accumulation thing because he'd been staying disciplined and really punishing Montiel as he tries to take chances and come in. But I think Montiel can be tamed in a sense, that you can kind of beat him down with the jab and discourage him long enough so that maybe he takes chances in the middle of the fight. But by the back end of the fight, heading into the championship rounds, he'll be discouraged and won't want to take any chances. He'll be done taking chances. And that's really, you know, then you can kind of just cruise because the only thing at that point that he has is a puncher's chance. And if Donaire fights that kind of fight, I think it's going to be an easier than people expect night for him. But if he decides to trade, it's going to be a problem.
You know, the thing about this fight, too, is that you bring up a good point about Fernando Montiel when he was out there with Hasegawa and how he turned that fight around with one punch and how Hasegawa really started to get a little comfortable. And at some point, you could say he even got a little confident that the fight was really swaying his way because Montiel was not pressuring the fight. He was trying to figure what he could do next. What was the next plan of attack? And what was going to work for him. And when he automatically adjusted, what worked for him ended the fight.
Right.
With Nonito Dornier, with the confidence build, and this is the thing I'm looking at. You know, a lot of times you want to look inside of a fighter's whole, you know, movement and the way they're carrying themselves and how they're addressing the media and how they're addressing the fans and how they're carrying themselves about. He's been training hard. But you can see that in some ways, he really doesn't look that concerned about Fernando. And that confidence build, I mean, the kid is an athlete. You could see it all the way. I mean, his body looks fantastic. His hand speed looks phenomenal. His combinations are a thing that you can awe yourself with. My question is, though, if he is dominant the way Hasegawa was, and Nonito decides to kind of drift off into his American Idol, you know, dream, he may be put to sleep. Because if that's one thing you can't do, is you cannot You can't unfocus yourself and look at the picture you've been painting and admire it, because Montella is going to be on at all costs. He may look like he's off. We've seen that. You know, some people are referring to Johnny, you know, when he went in the ring with Johnny Gonzalez, and you know, he didn't do anything. He didn't pressure anything. But you got to look at the age limit. The experience was not there. This was a guy that was kind of shoving her face and saying, look, this guy is great. Look at his skills. But I don't think he had found himself completely. I don't think he really understood the gifts of being an athlete, because Fernando Montiel, you can't take that away from him as well. He's an athlete, and he doesn't fight like your typical Mexican fighter. You know, he's got some rhythm in his legs. He's got good hand speed. He's got a good bounce to his feet, and he knows how to come in and out. That's what I like about him. And the other thing I love about Fernando Montiel in this fight too, Gabriel, is that he likes to take risks, you know. And I'm pretty sure he's going to be willing and wanting and needing to take a risk against Nonito Dornier. Now, taking those risks could cost them getting knocked out, though, because coming in with a guy that's strong and confident and has got good hand speed, sure, with a lot of combinations, you're going to get clipped on the way in. And that's where we're going to find out, was that fight, is this fight with Montiel, is it going to be one of those, I go back into my shell and try to survive like I did with Gonzalez, or do I go for the gusto like I did with Hasegawa? It's a great fight. I can't wait for this fight.
It just really depends on Nonito and how he approaches the fight. If he wants to make a statement, sometimes making a statement, you know, you get turned away, you know, and you try to be impressive and you try to do a little bit more than you should, rather than just win the fight. And I think a lot of people, particularly after the Tim Bradley fight, with Alexander, the expectations for that was to be fight of the year, and everybody was going to be, you know, we were just all expecting Hagler Hearns, you know, or Leonard Hearns, and instead, you know, we got De La Hoya Trinidad in some ways. And what I'm hoping is that Dornier doesn't say, here's my chance to give the fight fans what they wanted. Here's my chance to make a huge statement and to really impress everybody. And he walks into something, you know. I'm not saying I'm pulling for the guy, but I'm saying, you know, if you try to be exciting, you know, like most fighters I talk to that I really respect, by and large, don't predict knockouts. They always say, you know, I don't really know how the fight's going to go. I'm going to get in there. We're going to see how it goes. And I'm going to approach everything based on what I see. If Dornier is going in there looking to impress and you have an agenda, 9 times out of 10, that agenda rarely works out. And it ends up kind of coming in against you. So it really, to me, you know, Dornier's got all the attributes. He's got youth, he's got speed, size, power. Everything's kind of on his side in a lot of ways.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, Montiel's got maybe better one-punch knockout power. That's arguable. But he's got everything going his way. It's the mental and it's the experience. Because if you really, you know, Sidorenko, Dornier's last fight, yes, he was very impressive and he was a good fighter. Nobody's ever done that to him before. Just really used him like a heavy bag and beat him down. But if you look at all the guys before that, Dornier's been fighting a lot of guys that were just really tailor-made for him. And Sidorenko was too.
Right.
And when you jump up in class, like Hasegawa found out, you know, you're sitting there and you're going, wow, this is a lot easier than I thought it was. And you know, you're cruising, your guard gets down for a second, and boom, you knock the hell out. And that's what great fighters can do to you, experienced fighters. They can lull you to sleep and into a false sense of security, and then they can just rip that safety, you know, security blanket right off of you. And suddenly, you know, you're waking up going, what happened? You know, I thought I was supposed to win. You know?
Yeah.
And so very easily could happen in this fight. I would not be surprised.
And, you know, and the odds of the betting odds is saying that Nonito should win. But how, like Fernando Montiel had pointed out, hey, that was the same case when I went to Japan. And look what happened. You know, at one point of the fight, you have to say that Nonito is going to fall asleep in that fight if he's being dominant. If the youth and the strength and the speed and combinations are picking apart Montel, that he may just fall asleep. And I think a lot of us are hoping it will, because I think that's when the fight will definitely start, you know, because like you've mentioned, Montel is a great finisher, an experienced fighter, and a guy that can really turn things around. But as a finisher, he does then expose himself with flaws. And those flaws is he drops his hands and he throws combinations from all over, where he doesn't really pay attention to anything coming back, where he can get clipped by a strong no needle. We should have a seesaw battle between both of these guys in the mid rounds. In the late rounds, I'm not sure, Gabe. I'm really thinking that it's going to be a TKO for no needle. I think no needle's going to be able to pull it off with Fernando Montel. I think he's just going to be able to hold him off and not allow him in the later rounds to pick up on anything. He's going to make, Nonito's definitely going to make some mistakes. I think we're going to see him in one, by far, one of his toughest fights. But I still say that he has the tools to really put a lockdown on Montel. And
if I see a knockout, it's either a TKO, like you're saying, late in the fight, or it's off of a turn move, you know, where one fighter approaches, the other guy kind of pivots off, you know, maybe pivots off a jab or off a block, and then catches him with like a check hook kind of a move. It's going to be something that's unexpected, you know, off of their quickness, because both guys are athletic, both guys are quick, and they can walk you into something. But I tend to think it's going to be the taller guy doing that to Montiel, who's frustrated late in the fight and looking to make something happen. We'll see.
Yeah,
I cannot wait, dude. This has been such a good fight.
It's going to be a great fight, you know, and it also has another great fight on the undercard. Just to give everybody an update really quick, our publicist, Jesse Garcia Red, who we call him, Canelo's father, just contacted us and let us know. He did speak to Emmanuel Stewart. They're running a little late. They're on another interview, and that interview is running over. So immediately after they're done, they're going to call in, or else we're going to call them in and patch them in. So they do apologize for making everybody wait, but they're going to be calling in so they can talk to us, Andy Lee, about his upcoming fight. And, you know, we have a chance to talk to Emmanuel Stewart. And not just about Andy Lee, but about a Miguel Cotto. Got a fight coming up with Ricardo Mayorga, who was recently on Noche de Boxeo. If you hadn't had a chance to go back and check that out, or even check it up on YouTube if you don't speak Spanish, we did, you know, translate it for everybody, you know, as the best we could possibly. And you should be able to do that. You should be able to go back and check out Noche de Boxeo. That's a great all-Spanish-speaking radio show. The guys over there do a great, great job, man. I mean, fantastic job. You don't speak Spanish, just nod your head. You know, we only need a few words to say when you're listening to the radio show, you know. Sí, está bien, muy bueno. That's it. That's all you need and stuff, you know. Soto Corras, Jesus Soto Corras, the poor man version of Antonio Margarito, went in with Mike Jones. Mike Jones. My name is Mike Jones. And Mike Jones was supposed to have his day with Soto Corras because he's a slow, kind of, you know, Frankenstein walking type of fighter who needs the momentum to build rounds, to walk you down, to catch you and trap you. But guess what? He did that with a young Mike Jones, and he was able to do as much as damage as he could to Mike Jones. Mike Jones just looked like he kind of just didn't train enough, or maybe didn't take Soto Corras as serious as he should have, and he definitely paid for it, okay? The body shots that Soto Corras, man, could have been felt all throughout California when they met up that night. Now they're going to go at it again. Mike Jones saying, hey, you know what? It was a fluke. You know what? I didn't train properly, Cedric, Cedric, Cedric. Soto Corras is saying, hey, you think I gave him a beating the first time? Wait till we step in the ring again. It's Saturday night. We're going to find out who's really saying the truth. That's the thing about boxing. I love boxing because in the ring, guess what? Eventually, the lie's going to come out. You know, she never lies to us. She always tells us the truth, you know. And we're going to find out, man. What do you think about this fight, Gabriel?
I love this fight. Actually, it is happening again. You know, sometimes a guy gets the win and he just bails. He's like, all right, I learned my lesson. I'm out of here. And this time around, you know, justice prevails. And we're actually getting, you know, the fight that everybody kind of wanted to see, you know. You look at things like Fernando Guerrero is fighting this weekend, and this is a guy that a lot of us felt that Ishae Smith beat, and they're not going to rematch. You know, I talked to Guerrero in the gym, it was last week, and brought up the fight, and he's like, look, I learned what I needed to learn. If he keeps winning, then certainly, you know, if there's a reason to fight somebody like him again, then I will do it. But right now I'm just going to take my lesson, and I'm going to go home. And, you know, okay, I can understand that. And really, they took Guerrero, and he's kind of gone back to kind of developmental fights. We'll talk about his fight later. He's fighting tomorrow night on the first 3D ESPN.
They're telling me right now that we got to call in Emmanuel right now. So go ahead, Gabe, keep continue. Emmanuel.
I think this time Mike Jones, you know, he was having a lot of trouble making 147. I don't know if he did the train right, but I think it was more a question of him having some trouble making the weight. I think, you know, he's got all the attributes to make this a much easier fight than expected. But I also hear that Soto Gras is in tremendous condition. He never really left camp. He kind of healed up, but then came right back.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice.
To an automatic voice message system. but, you know, he was able to keep his conditioning for the most part, despite heal. So we're getting the best possible version of Jesus Soto Gras. And so I think, all things being equal, if Mike Jones, as he showed in the first fight, can't knock him out, you know, just straight up, then he's going to have to work on those guys, try to reopen them and get a TKO and box safely.
Right.
I don't think we'll also find out if he got Edwin Rosario, who when he fought Camacho was never the same. You know, Camacho wasn't after kind of getting, put to the grinder. So it'll be interesting to see how Mike Jones mentally reacts. See what kind of weaknesses he, you know, has shored up, and if Soto Gras can actually, you know, get the job done.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you know, the thing about Soto Gras is he's one of those guys that is just, you know, he was a Mayweather fighter, a guy that went down over there, and you throw him in the ring, and he put in the work. He's a guy you worked off of so that you can sharpen up your skills, because he's going to come forward, and he's going to try to chip away little by little what's in front of him. You know, he's not the most flashy dude in the world. He doesn't have the greatest skills. There's nothing about him that's going to make you go, wow. But he's one of those horses that's just going to trail along. He's not going to stop. He jogs. He doesn't sprint. And with Mike Jones, you saw he was sprinting so much, he tired out. You know, and that's the question: is he going to be able to have a game plan? Because he didn't look comfortable with the pressure. And this is a big guy. Soto Gras is not a small guy. He's a big boy. You know, so Mike really has to have a lot coming into this fight. You know, confidence wise, skill level wise, but more than just those two things, he's going to have a game plan. And that game plan is going to have one, he's going to have one or two, because he's going to have to mix it up. Because Soto Gras will cut that ring, and Soto will take them shots to land in one of his big body shots, you know. And that seemed to be the problem from the first time around when they had met up with each other. Them body shots were taking his toll. Them hip shots were taking the toe. And that is something Soto Gras didn't do well. He's going to cross that bridge when Mike Jones decides to throw punches. He doesn't have a problem paying the toll to cross the bridge to land on Mike Jones.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about him, is he is, like you were saying, kind of, Margarito 2.0, you know, and that he's a guy that he'll take whatever it is you give him, you know. If you're going to put your earmuffs on and try to just block, fine, I'll beat the hell out of your arms when it hits your hips, and I'm eventually going to make it so that you really wish you didn't just sit behind your guard, you know, and he will just wail on you all night long. And like you're saying, you know, Jones kind of sprinted, whereas, you know, Soto Gras kind of jogs, and it's a real steady pace, but he's like that guy that you're racing with, and he's just kind of a few feet behind you the whole time. He's just always on your heels, and eventually that kind of mental pressure and that physical pressure tires you out, and, you know, if you can get that momentum going and kind of roll down on you and overtake you in the long run. I really thought that Soto Gras won that first fight, and I was kind of bummed that he didn't get more of a shot at something else out of it, but we'll see. You know, I also, on a side note, kind of find this funny that Bob Arum today was complaining about.
Bob was
complaining about the fact that the winner of his fight isn't going to be in line to fight Andre Berto, for the WBC title. And it's like, well, Captain In House, how's it feel? Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly.
To see HBO, the unofficial promoter
Hey, bro, don't you understand boxing?
Yeah, well, apparently you don't today, Bob. You know, yesterday you understood boxing, today you don't. This is where we are. And you really, you know, you look at the rankings, and there was a big dust up yesterday about the
Hello?
Rankings.
Hello, can I speak to Andy Lee?
Speaking.
How you doing, Andy? This is Dave with Leaving the Ring Radio.
Hey, Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. Let me introduce my co-host, Gable Montoya, feature writer for Max Boxing.
Andy. How you doing, Gable? Good to hear you, man.
Yeah, man. Good to hear you.
Hey, we were trying to get a hold of Manuel, see if we could have you guys both on. I don't know if he's with you and stuff, but we'll give him a call a little later. We wanted to talk to you for a little bit, Andy. Is that okay?
Yeah, fine. I just spoke with Emmanuel. I think he's at home in his apartment down where we're staying down here in the camp. So, if you get him on, I'm sure he'll answer.
So how's camp going for you right now?
Camp's going very good. I think I'm ahead of schedule with my where I'm at in terms of fitness and sharpness. I've already sparred plenty of rounds, and this weekend we got two guys coming in, Demetrius Andrade and Mark Tucker. Two undefeated southpaws coming in to give me plenty of sparring. So the camp's going very well, you know. We're here, Miguel's here. He's training hard and looking very impressive. And there were some good guys in the gym. Jonathan Banks has been training. Who else? Dominic Dalton. Olive McCall's even in the gym working hard. Cedric Boswell and Brad Solomon. There's a lot of good fighters in the gym, and we're all training at the same time. So a lot of interesting sparring sessions going on.
I would say, you know, God, I'd love to be there when you guys are doing all this. Now, talking about Miguel Cotto, are you guys mixing it up, you know, maybe sharing some notes with each other?
Yeah, that's all. We're never down to different opponents who we've been fighting and different styles, but we watch each other spar. I watch him spar as much as I can because he's a great boxer, and he's actually like a very complete fighter. He can box and he can fight and moves well and punches well. I think his boxing ability is underrated. You know, I've been watching him now. Was last camp when he fought Yuri Foreman and all this camp, and very impressed by him. You know, so when you see him every day, you realize why he's a champion.
Absolutely. Good, Gabriel. Ask your questions.
Andy, you know, I'm glad we didn't get a chance to hook up in Atlantic City and do an interview, so I'm glad we finally got to catch up with you. One of the things I noticed about you when I saw you, I think the first time I met you was in Los Angeles. You were out here for the Cintron fight, and you weren't working out. You were just kind of there in camp. And at that time, you know, you seemed kind of, this is like back in like 2008, you seemed very young. You seemed like a kid, you know, very talented guy that everybody was looking at. But you seemed kind of young to me. And what I noticed about you was a certain maturity that you had in Atlantic City, just kind of the way you held yourself. And after the Brian Vera loss, you kind of went off the radar. You were kind of on the fast track. We saw you a lot on TV. And then that loss happened. And then you went and basically did like a world tour, you know, fighting in Ireland. You were in, you know, Indiana and Germany, Chicago. Talk about that period of time, like 9 fights. Where you basically kind of went and retooled and kind of worked on your game, you know. Basically, get us up to speed on what you've been working on all this time.
That's a very good question, to tell you the truth, because when you met me first, as you said, I seemed very young. Well, I was physically, I was, you know, immature, and mentally, I was probably, you know, I was. You know, the fight game and the bright lights and everybody in it seemed to want to be my best friend, and I was the young kid on the block, and you know, everyone was patting me on the back, and you know, I was rubbing shoulders with all the great boxers, and you know, at all the big fights, and it was a great experience. I really enjoyed it, but I became, you know, I didn't get to see any of the other side, and then when I lost, you know, all of kind of seemed just overnight, that whole image and the whole world just kind of came crashing down, and it was really tough thing to go through, you know. A lot of soul searching done, and you know, I had to rebuild myself all around, spiritually, you know, emotionally and not just physically. And it was a really tough thing to do. You know, when I go to the fights, it was almost like I was no longer on the inside or the inner circle. I was like being on the outside looking in, you know. It was kind of weird, you know. And
yeah.
But now that I've gone through it all, I feel a lot more, obviously, as you said, I am a lot more mature, obviously, but a lot more rounded, as not just as a fighter, but as a person as well, because, you know, they say what doesn't kill you makes stronger, but, you know, it's cliche, but in a way, it's obviously true, because I've grown from it. I'm not enamored by the boxing world or the people in it. I see it for what it is, and I know it's a business, and it's a tough business, and if you can't produce in the ring, then you need to get out of it. But I believe I have what it takes. I still believe in myself. I know the mistakes I made, what I couldn't to lose that fight, and I'm determined to never let it happen again. And so I continue to box, and I continue to chase my dream of being the middleweight champion.
Do you think you were rushed a little bit? That you know, you have all this ability, you know, and you're getting in the ring with... I remember when Jermaine Taylor came to camp for the first time, and you were pretty much the king of the Kronk at that point. You were the guy to beat in that gym. And, you know, Manny had told me for years, you know, I got this Irish middleweight kid that's going to be unbelievable. Do you think maybe we made too much too soon and we didn't let you kind of mature, get those right fights that would build you? And then, you know, like right now, it seems like it's the right time for you to be there. You're still young. You're still only, what, 26?
26,
what do you think it was a good thing that maybe you had that loss and you matured in ways that you never knew you would?
It's a tough question to answer because, you know, I always, like, I've spent hours and hours racking it in my head what I could have changed or what I could have done differently, but it came to me at that time, you know, and I took it, but, you know, it's easy to get, you know, you're trying not, I'm trying not to get philosophical, but just be direct. It happened, and I lost. You know, what happened has happened, and now I'm coming back, and I'm getting to where I once was, but I'm a better fighter, and I'm stronger all around, and I believe this time I'm ready for it. But at that stage, I believed I was ready for it. The only problem was I was naive that I went into the fight underprepared and overconfident, and it cost me the fight. But it was like, looking at it, if it hadn't happened that night, it would have happened in the next fight or the fight after, because I was being stepped up in competition, and I was being talked as, you know, a contender after only 14 and 15 fights. So it was
yeah,
premature, but it was nobody's fault. I was doing it in the ring, you know. I was every time they put me in with somebody, I was winning easy, and I was, you know, beating everybody in the gym. So I was moved wrong. I was moved at the you know, Manuel says I move fighters at their level of ability. You know, if a fighter's ready, Manuel thinks he's ready after five fights, he'll move him in the right way. So but the ability is still there, and you know, the potential is still there. Hopefully I can just fulfill it and live up to it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it seems like, Andy, that you sacrifice so much. I mean, you know, first off, your country has so rich with boxing history, and it looks like that you pretty much have put that on back. You know, everybody talking about you in the beginning, and now it seems like you feel that in some ways, do you feel that it's your responsibility to make sure that you hold up what people were talking about?
Yeah, well, Emmanuel's put great faith in me. You know, he almost picked me from obscurity in Ireland and took me over here and put his full weight behind me and endorsed me. And I believe I owe him a lot because he's done a lot for me, but he's talked a lot about me, and I believe I have to prove him right, you know, and prove myself right. I'm out here, you know, I've left my home and took a chance and put myself out here. I fought turned pro, I was offered a very good contract to stay amateur for another 4 years and be almost like a semi-pro amateur and be paid and get receive education and sponsorship with cars and different things, endorsements. But I had a chance to go to America and join the Conk gym and be with Emmanuel Stewart, and that was obviously a riskier option, but it was one that had a lot more benefits if it would come, if it paid off in the end. So I put myself on the line, and I believe the people of Ireland support me, and they're great fans, and everywhere I go, I get great, I get messages of support. Every day I get emails from people and wishing me well. So all I can do is do my best and keep fighting and hopefully keep winning, and hopefully it'll be good enough, That's all I can do, really.
In your next upcoming fight, what is it that you would like to show that it's been worked on and improved?
I think this is going to be a good fight for me to showcase my skills, because I'm fighting a guy who's a boxer himself and is a southpaw, and it's really awkward, and a lot of people would not like to fight him because he's tall and he's a mover and he's a bit of a spoiler. But, I think the way our styles clash, it could be a fight where I get to showcase a lot of my skills, a lot of my feints and my ability, my leg, my footwork, and my punching power. So I think it's going to be a good fight. I don't by no means think it's going to be an easy fight. I believe I'm going to have to, if I win, I'll definitely earn it. But we'll see, first and foremost, it's to win.
Right.
And look good. That was obviously my intention as well. I want to look good winning. So there's a lot on the line. Obviously this is a big fight for both of us, with HBO as well coming. That adds an extra incentive to the fight, because if we look good, then there's possibility of a title fight for the winner. So there's so much on the line, and there'll be a lot. But at the end of the day, you just have to get in there and perform. And whoever does that, whoever performs the best capability, will win the fight. Whoever can implement what they do good, I know what McEwen does well, and I know what I do well. Whoever can put that to use in the ring on the night will win the fight, and we'll just see what happens,
With every fight, there's always a lot on the line, but with this fight here, why do you think there's a lot more on the line?
Well, because it's a crossroad fight. For me, I can't afford to lose it. There's no way in my mind I can continue. I'm not saying if I lost, I would retire, but I'd have to ask myself the question, where am I going? Because if I can't beat Craig McKeown, what chance do I ever have of beating Sergio Martinez or some of the other champions? I'm in this business to be a world champion and to be the best. And, if I can't do that, I'm not going to waste my time by being a fringe contender or fighting, around the place. So that's always on the line with every fight that I go into, but there is a lot on this. There's a TV, there's a home, there's a lot on the line always. There's always pressure around fights, but that's what you have to deal with. If you want to be a champion, if I win this fight, from now on, the rest of my fights will be hopefully televised or big, meaningful fights. And so it's something that I'll have to overcome and deal with. Both of us will have to.
I can't even begin to fathom up, how will it feel to know that this is a make-em-break-em fight for you? You said it's a crossroad fight for you here, Lee. And could you tell me a little bit? How hard is it? Because you have to be prepared. You have to have all these preparations. You got to get yourself, ready. There's a lot more on the line with this fight, like you said, because it's a crossroad fight. How hard is it for you, or could you explain it? How do you balance it all out to stay focused, to listen what Emmanuel Stewart has to tell you, to make sure that the game plan fits and follows through so that you walked away being the victor?
Well, you prepare yourself in the gym, physically, mentally. What I've been doing in training camp is the things I'm going to try to implement in the fight. And if I do it, repetition every day, then it'll come naturally to me in the fight, in the ring. Mentally, you prepare yourself by envisioning the fight, playing it out in my mind, imagining the whole scene, the crowd, the dressing room beforehand. And that way, it almost makes it easy to prepare yourself. But I've always had a saying, it's always helped and it's always like, I've always had this saying to myself, and I got it from a movie a long time ago, an obscure movie, but it said in the movie, it said, things of little importance should be taken very seriously, and things of great importance should be taken lightly. And I interpreted that by saying, like, the little things in life, like, for me, for, like, hydration, getting the right hours of sleep, making sure I have little things like the right socks and the right underwear, like, to wear when I'm going into the ring, and small little things, the right gauze, the right bandages, the right tape, that, you know, will make all the difference. But then the big things, like the fight, I should take it lightly, because that's going to play out the way it's going to play out. And to build it up and make it bigger than it is only adds pressure. You know, there's certain things in life you can control, like you can control yourself. I control what I wear, control what I do in that ring. And that's the only thing I can control. And things outside of that, what my opponent does, how he's preparing, or what the judges might do, I can't control. So there's pointless worrying about them. And that's all. That's how I approach things and approach fight.
Absolutely. You know, let me see if my co-host, Gabe, are you back with us with Stuart?
Yeah. No, actually, I was trying to get Manny, but he might be sleeping or something. I'm not sure. I texted him, but, you know, I'm not sure if he, you know, he's getting older. He may be going to bed a little earlier. I'm curious, you know, because you originally were supposed to fight John Duddy, and then he pulled out, which I think was actually kind of an honorable move. You know, he basically said, I can't give 100% to this, and if I can't do that, then I shouldn't be fighting. What were your thoughts about that, and then getting basically a tougher assignment in a guy like Craig McEwen?
When I heard John Duddy retired, you know, first of all, I wasn't sure if it was true or not, but, you know, when I realized it was a real deal, I just... and read his reasons for doing it. Well, he just had to say, well, there was nothing really he could do about it. And he doesn't know anybody anything. He fought his heart out in the ring and gave it all and excited a lot of people when he was coming up. And in a way, John Duddy was good for Irish boxing in New York and in America, because before him there had been a little lull. Maybe Wayne McCullough was the only, like, exciting Irish fighter at the time before John Duddy. And then he came and got, you know, Irish boxing fans interested again. And, you know, whatever he does now, I wish him well. And, it's a shame we couldn't fight, not for me personally, but because for me it was never nothing personal between me and John Duddy. You know, just two Irish guys and both trying to make it in America. But a lot of the fans wanted to see the fight and had built it up for a while. So for them, it was a shame. But for me, it was no big deal, because if he doesn't want to do it, if he can't train, doesn't feel he has it anymore, then you don't belong in the ring, because it's a dangerous place to be. So yeah, I wish him well and hope everything works out for him.
And as far as was McEwen somebody that was on your radar that you were aware of before this fight was made?
I never thought I would fight him. I thought I might fight him somewhere down the line, because we'd fought as amateurs in 2005, and we'd been on kind of like a European circuit. He was one of the best boxers, if not the best boxer, from Scotland on the national amateur team, and I was maybe the best amateur to boxing on the Irish national team. And we're on the same kind of, you know, European multinations and European championships and Olympic qualifiers. We went through those together. And the Irish and Scots are always kind of friendly with each other anyway, because a lot of similarities in the cultures of the two countries. So we knew each other. And when we turned pro, obviously, I had to follow his results. I saw him fight a couple of times. I saw him fight once in California. And would meet him around the place at different fights, and was always friendly. So I obviously was aware of him in that way. But when John Duddy retired, they said, "Well, look, you can still fight on the undercard. Would you fight Craig McEwen?" And I said, "Definitely, no problem." You know, and I'm sure he said the same when he got the call to fight me. He said the same. Like, we are friends and that, but we both know the business and we both know the game, and you know, we both would want to win it just as much if we were fighting someone we hated. So we're going to both give it all. And, you know, the winner's going to move on, and the loser will have to start again.
And, you know, just for me anyways, the last question, you're on the undercard of Martinez versus Indzirik, which is, you know, it would seem that it's kind of a natural that the winners of these two fights would probably end up fighting each other. It seems like almost that's what this card is kind of building towards. What are your thoughts on that main event and the champion Sergio Martinez?
To me, it's a difficult fight for Martinez because, one, he's coming off such a high of last year, beating Pavlik and then having a great knockout over Paul Williams. And then he's been, you know, he was just like, his star is really on the rise. He's considered one of the best pound fans. And then he's put in with this guy, Zindrik, who's a very good boxer, who but not a lot of people know him and not a lot of people would have seen him or even heard of him before. And it's going to be, could be a difficult fight, and it could, you know, Martinez has to live up, like, he would have to live up to that high of last year and then to be put in there with an awkward, southpaw, tight defensive guy. Cause, you know, cause
yeah.
it's, I don't know if it's a good move, like, by their matchmakers or whatever it was or whoever ordered the fight, because I don't know, it might not be an attractive fight, but I believe Martinez will win and have, you know, he's got mobility and he'll, you know, he'll punch and he'll faint and he'll just, I think he'll out-hustle and out-work Zindrik, who's not a bad boxer, who's definitely a good fighter. And, you know, it would set up a nice clash if I can win and he can, Martinez can win. But I'd fight either of them, the winner, whoever wins that fight. If I have a chance to fight him, I would definitely take it. So I think Martinez is a good boxer. He's definitely the fighter of the year last year. But he has flaws as well, as everybody does. And I think with my style, I could exploit them. So, you know, first of all, I'll hopefully do the business, take care of my job on March 12th and beat Craig McEwen. And then if the title fight's possibility, you know, I'll be gearing up for that one. So that's all, really.
Well, you know, we got to wish you the best on your upcoming fight, and hopefully it's not a crossroad for you. You were able to cross the road so we could see you again back in, you know, in the ring and stuff here, Andy. And, hey, we appreciate you coming on with us here on Leaving the Ring and, you know, over there in training camp, and definitely you have to stay focused in this fight. So we wish you all the best here, brother, and hope to get you back on again on Leaving the Ring.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Anytime, I'd love to be on the show. And very good questions and a very good interview. Thank you.
Thanks,
guys, for having me on.
Thanks
have a
so
good
much,
night.
Andy. All right, man. Take care.
Take care, Andy. You know, in the process, we were trying to get a hold of Emmanuel Stewart. We'll try one more time to see if we can get Emmanuel and maybe have a really quick interview, because I know a lot of people are anticipating the Victor Ortiz interview. So let's just try it one more time with Emmanuel Stewart, because you like to, you know, bounce some questions off him, and he's a real knowledgeable guy.
I never really thought about socks and underwear being such an important part of a fighter's gear, but, you know, I guess, you know, the last thing you want to think about when somebody's going to knock you out is, boy, do I have a wedgie. You know, this is, I really should have gone with the boxer briefs, you know.
Automatic voice message system.
Oh, man. You know, Manny was probably asleep.
Yeah, I'm sure. Pretty sure he's asleep. But that's all right. You know, we'll catch up with him again.
Yeah,
we got plenty of time before that fight. And Manny's almost the kind of guy you want to give him a full hour because he,
right.
You know, it's not like he's ever at a loss for words, you know.
No, he's definitely not at loss of words and stuff, you know. We should talk a little bit about that ESPN card, you know, the big buzz about it right now that's going to be on 3D. To tell you the truth, fight fans, I don't know anybody with a 3D TV. You know, I wouldn't even know where to go. I mean, are they going to start – unless they're going to have it at, you know, a sports bar and all that, I'll be able to go check it out. But Friday night, I'm going to be gone to go to the fights to witness the mismatches that are happening over there in San Francisco. So I'm not going to even have a chance to see unless I catch it on the replay. But then again, I don't have no 3D glasses. You own any good 3D glasses?
What I usually do is have a few beers and a few shots, and then everything kind of seems a little bit like it's in 3D. So this isn't really anything new for me.
I think the only time I want to wear 3D glasses through a 3D fight is when it's going to have the ring card. This is when they need to put the camera on the ring card, girls, okay? If you're going to have 3D, okay? Hey, but don't have any of those busted-looking chicks that I saw back in the Angie Warden Psycho Bika, you know, Oakland card. And those girls were, woo, look like they found him outside holding out signs saying, please feed me, you know. But have some really good ones, and I'll have the 3D glasses on there with a couple of rounds of beers and stuff, you know. But yeah. In all honesty, who's got a 3D TV? If you got one, Fight fans, anybody out there, please call in and let us know. How does it look? I mean, does it give you a headache after a few minutes? I don't know. You know, I haven't done any research on the 3D TVs, and what I'm hearing is that it looks like every company, every manufacturer is going to be trying to do 3D, unless they're already doing it now. They just haven't released them all, but I don't know. Who wants their TV all the time on 3D?
Yeah, I don't know if I could really handle that, but you know, I'll tell you one thing. I bet you this fight's going to be a lot better than Avatar, 3D or not. You know, it's going to be at least a little bit better plot. You know,
you mean the Pocahontas plot?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can even get into this fight now. You know, it is kind of a stay busy affair for Fernando Guerrero. He's fighting. He's fighting Derek Finlay, this is more the kind of guy that that we're talking about when you're building somebody that you want to see fight. You know, Finlay's only got four losses. He's got 11 knockouts. He's a big guy. He's fought some top level guys. I mean, he's kind of shorter, but in terms of his frame, he's able to carry more of a weight. He's fought 168 to, I think, 154 all the way up to 168. And I don't believe he's ever been stopped before. So this will be something of a test for Guerrero to kind of see where he's at. Because this guy's taken, Matt Korobov the distance. He did get stopped against Andre Durrell, but it was like a technical decision loss. He went the distance with Andre Ward as well. So this is a guy that's been in with some world-class people. He's able to kind of beat that second tier. I think he's been over like Michael Walker. But he's going to be able to go some rounds. And if Guerrero is not on his game, he's going to have some issues. And Guerrero, he's not the biggest middleweight in the world. He's a very solid guy. But I was surprised when I ran into him in the gym last week that he's only like 5'9". He's not like the tallest middleweight in
right,
the world.
Right, that's actually really short for a middleweight.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Hagler,
Right. Yeah, I think Hagler was about that size, and James Kirkland is about that size, although he fights at 154, although I think in his next fight he'll be fighting at 160.
Right.
So it'll be interesting just to see, how Guerrero is able to implement some of the things that he's been working on with his new trainer, Andrew Council. Council's been with him for... I want to say he knew him all through the amateurs, was aware of him, I think worked with him at one point. But originally Guerrero was with Barry Hunter and Hal Chernoff. Chernoff was a manager, Al Heyman's the advisor, but he was also a co-trainer with Barry Hunter. Hunter's gone now, and Andrew Council, who was with him in his fourth fight has now been elevated to head trainer. And he was saying that there were certain things that he wasn't able to really fix because it wasn't his place to say, all during those years. But now he's able to kind of get a hold of him and say, all these years, you've been doing this wrong, you've been doing this wrong, and I'd really like to see you do this. A lot of things he was saying was just sort of minor changes, like the famous Al Pacino speech in On Any Given Sunday, that football is about inches, and the inches are all around you. It's just trying just a little bit harder, just going a little bit further. And minor adjustments. And that's kind of what Council was telling me about Guerrero, was that it wasn't big things that he needed to change. It was, the way he pivots off of a left hook or a right hook, the way he pivots off of punches, and getting his head to move just a little bit more, on a regular basis, and how to fire punches and then get off the firing line before anything comes back. They always say, don't stick around for the receipt, after you make a purchase. I was watching him train with one of the L.A. Matadors, Russell L'Amour, and I noticed that he was doing a lot of that. And L'Amour is a big guy. He's like 6'1". He's a big boy for middleweight. And
right.
I'll be damned. I mean, Guerrero, and I actually think, I think Russell is ranked number 3 in all of the World Series of Boxing. He's a very good young fighter. And he's actually kind of physically more mature. He's 27, so he's got that man strength going for him. And after about a round and a half, two rounds, you could see the class difference, and Guerrero really took over. And at one point, landed this hook that absolutely shook Lemore to his foundation. And for a second, the trainers wanted to stop the fight, you know, or stop the sparring session. And it showed a lot of heart by Lemore. He said, no, I'm good. This is a learning experience. And he kind of got himself back together and just went right back in and started fighting. And Guerrero really handed it to him, but the kid made it through, and it was just an impressive little sparring session. You know, it was like four hard rounds. And to me, you know, Guerrero is a guy that has a lot of upside. I know a lot of people, myself included, didn't feel he beat Ishae Smith. But after seeing him fight in Atlantic City and then seeing him now fighting, you know, in preparation, I could really see the difference. And one of the big changes, too, was straighter punches. He used to really wing his shot, throw hooks and really big bombs, you know, and really kind of puff up his chest right before he would throw that rear cross. And now you could see him kind of throwing the off-speed pitch, you know, where you go through two or three light punches and then, boom, you come with something heavy. And he's really learning that art of kind of changing speeds, and that's kind of lulling your opponent into sleep and thinking everything's cool, and then, boom, out lights. And so I'm really excited to see him because he seemed to be a guy that really wants to learn and is learning, you know. And I did a full feature on him this week on Max Boxing. Called The Fighter Within. I encourage you to check it out. He's got a hell of a story, man. Kid has come a real long way from the...
And you're
going
to be able to see him on 3D. If you have 3D glasses, you'll have a shot to see him in 3D. You know, the thing is that going to trip me out. If you do have the chance to watch it in 3D and all that, be sure not to drink too much because the punches may be flying at you. You may spill your beer from throwing your head backwards, you know, to try to avoid a punch. You know, I'm really curious. I got to tell you that, how this is going to work out, how it's going to pan out. The other thing that I'm really kind of wondering here, maybe some fight fans in the chat room or want to call in and explain this to me, but Apex presents the World Boxing Heavyweight Championship. They're hosting the Klitschko and Solis fight in March 19 on the Apex channel. I've never even heard that. Have you?
No.
I have that channel.
Is it a new channel?
Do we have to pay for this new channel? I mean, where can I subscribe for this channel? Is this a stream? The thing is, they just threw something at us. That's the thing, too. Look. MMA fans like to make fun of us all the time. I mean, saying that, the only people that listen and watch boxing are guys that have rim hats and cigars and drink big old barrels of beer. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, and I'm gonna add to it. The other thing that you could kind of, you know, kind of put us in a category is that we don't like our fights changed around. Just keep them in the normal channels and stuff, you know. Don't make up new channels. Please, you know, this confuses us, man. You know, we got Fox Sports Net. We got, you know, Versus. We got, you know, Telefuturo, HBO. I mean, we got so many now. Now you're adding a new one that I don't even know I can even get. And this is a fight that I do want to watch. So now I got to really, and I've been trying to stay away from the streams here. I've been trying to be a good boy, Gabriel. You know, make sure that I'm contributing back into, because you got to remember that these fighters do have to make a living. And they make the living about the amount of people that tune in and watch these fights here. So I've been trying to stay with. But I got to tell you right now, if you're the owner or you're promoting this Apex, you know, channel, I don't know where you guys are at. You give us a press release, but you don't even tell us about this new channel. Introduce yourself. You know what I'm saying? Introduce yourself so we know where to go. I think everybody's wondering, where do we go with this channel? I don't know. Please, somebody let us know. Where do we find this channel at? Is it on Comcast, DirecTV, Satellite? Is there a new server that we need to kind of call in and just to get? Because the funny thing is I'm one of those type of people that will just buy a particular channel. That's why I only have HBO or for the fights and for, like I was telling Gio, our photographer for Leaving the Ring, the Colombian Slugger and stuff, I only have HBO for Cat House, buddy. I don't have it for anything else. Even though they haven't brought on a new series of segments of The Cat House, I still watch the reruns on demand here. So, you know.
I need to find out. I heard that. I was like, Apex, like, don't understand. You're like, you're not really speaking my language. What is this Apex that you speak of, you know? Sometimes boxing more than any other sport. My brother always would say this. He's like, "Is it me, or does boxing abuse its fans more than any other sport? You know, whether it's just giving us crappy fights, or not giving us the fight that we want, or stuff like this, where you're like, okay, that's great, you guys are showing the fight, but where is it? Like, why do you make me work so hard for it? You know, like
so hard, exactly.
Yeah, I don't understand. You know, but you know, at the very least, it is going to be televised, and so we'll be able to see it. But I mean,
good
Lord.
I'm being told right now that it is on web base. It's not on TV. So you're going to be able to catch it on, you know, the internet, which seems like that's the way to go nowadays. A lot of people are now more using their internet to watch movies, stream movies, even watch episodes in sports because they're able to communicate. Even though you could, you know, a lot of the HD sets that are being, you know, sold, you can get your internet and your Twitter and your Facebook on your television. I'm looking to buy one too as well, so because I'm just that lazy, you know what I mean? Well, I don't want to sit in front of a desktop screen. I'd rather watch a big screen and watch whatever I can at the same time, tweet and Facebook and stuff. You know, talking
that's
about
the point. Yeah, it's all going to be on one thing at some point. You know, I think everything in about 5 years, your computer is going to be your TV, and for some people, it actually is already. You know, so I think that's just where we're headed in general. But, you know, give me a heads up.
Way to go. Yeah. You know, the only thing that I'm worried about here is that when I do have family members, my Twitter, I'm going to be a little embarrassed when I see Gabriel cussing somebody out when he's going through his Twitter wars with somebody. And I got to explain that to my guests that are there. And I'll be like, yeah, that's my co-host. That's, yeah, that guy there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks. No, I've been trying to avoid those and unsuccessfully, but I look at them as more Twitter discussions that end up getting heated as opposed to a Twitter war, you know. And I don't know, some people kind of get down and dirty with me, you know, or want to take you on, and you know, I try to tell people, look, you know, I'm just trying to keep my time on.
You just can't avoid it. You know, Dimitri Pirbag is a fighter that shocked the world with Danny Jacobs, you know, and Danny had his really nasty knockout with Pirbag when they did step into the ring on HBO. And surprisingly, not to us, and if you're a hardcore fight fan, just like what Vince Parra said, you know, the smart boxing fans, they're going to see the writing on the wall. We all knew that you weren't going to see Pirog again on HBO. Instead, he's going to be in Russia March 26th. Okay? And he's going to be defending his first title defense of the WBO middleweight title, but yet, not a lot of us are going to be able to catch it, you know? Unfortunately. You know, it's going to be on a Russian channel, on Channel 2. It's a 2-hour telecast, and it's going to be shown in Moscow time. You know, and if you don't go and stream it or put it on an agenda or a schedule, you're going to miss Pirog, and you're probably going to forget about him just because of the fact that when you win, and I did quote this on my article, was that just because you win great doesn't mean you get great opportunities afterwards.
Yeah, I remember at the time, I think I said it on the show, and I certainly wrote it. I basically made a bet, you know, it was like, I bet you that we'll see Danny Jacobs on HBO. And no disrespect to him. He's got a good manager in Al Haymon that gets these opportunities. But don't be surprised if you see him on HBO, the guy that lost that fight, before you see Dmitry Pirog ever again on HBO. And I remember running into Kerry Davis at Martinez Williams 2, and I asked him, you know, like, why not, like, invest in Pirog and really, you know, get behind him as a fighter. He's very exciting. He's on your network. Everybody really wanted to see him. Why not get involved with him and then kind of build towards a fight with Sergio Martinez, whose belt he has? And Kerry Davis's response was, HBO does not buy fights, or does not buy fighters. They buy fights. and that's very funny because you know, we just saw recently that Amir Khan got an HBO date. It was given to him, you know, but he didn't have an opponent. And they also announced this week that Paul Williams would be fighting against the dreaded TBA on April 30th on mm-hmm. the network, fighting, you know, at an undetermined weight against an undetermined opponent. That's really weird because I thought they bought fights, not fighters. But
really short memory guys, Ross Greenberg and Kerry Davis, who give excellent speeches, but unfortunately, their words really fall really quick when it comes to putting them to the test, Steve Kim having his rant over there on Twitter as well, which I got to say I'm addicted to Twitter now. I wasn't before. I don't tweet a lot. I do tweet once in a great while, but I do read everybody's stuff on there, man, and some folks really just go into it and bring up some great points and stuff. I tell you one interesting thing was Gilbert from WBC, who has taken over for Jose Soliman, he's starting to tweet. I don't know if you noticed that there, Gabriel. And he's talking about introductions for the Hall of Fame, and he's saying what do they have to hold in order to be abducted? And he's talking about Valerio, and he's like, he had the most knockout records. And I seen that, and I was like, I just got to kind of correct this guy here is that, we're not taking anything away from Edwin, but it was against really weak oppositions, And if that's what it takes just to get a bunch of guys to knock out, then go right ahead. And he says, well, we're not talking about his outside stuff out of the ring. I am talking about his inside stuff about the ring. I'm not talking about his outside stuff, But I'm kind of going off the topic of what we were talking about Purog here. And it's sad to see him that he's not going to be able to get back on HBO. He's going to have to work his way back. And when he does get back somewhere and on any network, he's going to be forgotten. He's just going to be the guy where a highlight and refresh people's memories. But then they're going to say, like, well, big deal. What has he done from them, since then? Because it's always the solution for, a casual fan. Well, what has he done? He beat Danny Jacobs, big deal. What has he done now? Do a whole lot when the networks don't want to give him the opportunity to do what we think, a lot of us think, that he could accomplish. And what he has even said, prior on your interview and your article, look, I'm not going to win them all, but I want to fight them all.
Yeah, I mean, that's somebody that you want to get behind. It's somebody that's exciting. And one of the writers that we had, a good friend of mine, John Novoselic, from Doghouse, we had him on, and I think he mentioned it there, or he mentioned it to me, because we both are the same way. We will kind of force the people around us to watch boxing, and try to do our own part to kind of further the sport and to kind of bring people back that just watch MMA. And a lot of his friends watch MMA. And that night, he had a bunch of people over for the pay-per-view, and he said, the rest of this pay-per-view is garbage, but there's this one fighter that's going to be really good, and you should check him out. And he said, bar none, and these guys still asked about him. All those guys came away. These are all MMA fans. They all came away going, who the hell was that Russian guy, and when can I see him again?
Right.
And the answer is probably never.
Probably never, right.
If you get Channel 2 in Russia, maybe you can see it, it's going to be a bummer for Channel,
or EPEX,
for Channel 1.
If you get EPEX. Or maybe 3D glasses. You may be able to see him all the way at Russia with them 3D glasses that's trying to push in our face on ESPN2, man. Anyways.
They're going to have to change his name from Russia with getting no love. It's really sad.
It's a shame, Hey, listen, we're going to put up the interview that we did conduct with Victor Ortiz. We had to do a pre-recording with him because he couldn't make it at the scheduled time that we have the show, which is between 5 and 8 o'clock Pacific time. So we did have a chance, and we did find the right way to record it so you can hear everything clearly, because in the past it's been a complaint, but now everything has been cleared up. So you're going to have a chance to hear a raw and uncut Victor, okay? Nothing was edited. This guy just came on, said what he needed to say. So without further ado, let's put on Victor Ortiz and hear what he had to say about everybody at the 140 division, all the way up to the 147.
You're listening to Leaving the Ring.
We got Victor Ortiz here live right now on Leaving the Ring. Hey, Vic, so how are you feeling about the Andre Berto fight?
Well, given the fact that I'm the guy who called him out, I feel pretty damn good.
Now, Are you moving up in weight to face him, or are you guys meeting at some type of a catch weight?
No, I moved up to 147, to the welterweight division, due to the fact that, obviously every world champion at 140 pounds fears me, Well, they want to admit it or not, nobody's giving me a shot, including Marcos Maidana. I have to I practically beg him. I said, please. In the end, I just said, I don't even want your purse, man. You can have mine. I just want you, bro.
Wow.
And none of that ever happened. And then next thing you know, they promised me, you know, the winner of my boy over there, you know, Alexander and Timothy Bradley. And then, of course, they promised me to fight against Amir Khan. The fights against all those opponents were really possible. But then in the end, someone from their camps, not really knowing who said what, but they said no. Peterson, but they won't fight Ortiz. And I'm like, what?
So even though you're part of the Golden Boy banner, you're saying that that fight is not even realistic?
I highly doubt it. You know what? That's why I turned my back on the 140 season. I just moved to 147, challenged what is known as the pound-for-pound best fighter of all time up to date, Andre Berto. So I agree to disagree completely on him being the pound-for-pound best of all time. So as far as I'm concerned, he's a good fighter. Not gonna lie, I obviously can't put him down. I mean, he's a world champion for a reason. But at the same time, he's got what I want, and I'm here.
I heard this fight's gonna be at a. How you doing today, Victor? I should start by saying hi.
I'm great. I'm actually awesome.
It's like perfect weather for surfing. You got to go train.
I would, but my coach has already told me not to be surfing right now.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a good idea.
It would not look good. It would definitely not look good on me.
Right.
I heard this fight's going to be at it's like 145 or give or take a pound, probably like a 146 catch weight. Is that true? Or is it a full 147 fight?
I was really hoping we were coming in at 147 period, but I guess I don't know. The team's arranged to come in at 146 because I've never fought 147, which I told my coaches I was perfectly fine at coming in at welterweight, but they agreed to differ with me, and I was like, hey, you guys are the coaches, you guys are the boss, the boss is in the gym, so whatever you guys say, I'm just here to fight. But at the same time, I guess there is going to be a catch weight, whether it's, I don't know, I don't really know why there's going to be a catch weight. I mean, I told them, I'm down to fight him at 154 if they wanted 154, but that's not the case. And there will be a catch weight, I guess, according to what I've been hearing. 146 is the max. I mean, add one more pound to that, it's 147, so what's the difference, you know?
Right.
It seemed like you've been ready. I mean, you're bigger than Berto. It looks like you're really ready to go to 147. I was watching you in the gym before your last fight. It just seemed like your upper body's huge, your legs are a little thin, and that's usually where you can kind of start to see, okay, it's time to move up. Does your body feel like it's really just ready to grow? I mean, you're coming in your mid-20s now. Now is the right time?
That's one thing that I didn't even fear. The thing is I'm an abnormal big 140, so I don't really mind fighting 140 because I can make the weight no problem. I eat breakfast, I eat lunch before weigh-ins. I mean, I'm drinking my water and everything, so I'm not struggling to make any weight. As far as 147, it gives me 7 pounds to put around. So, you know, at the end of the day, I never struggled to make any kind of weight. 147 is definitely going to be an easier weight class for me to make. I feel strong, and thank goodness I've been given power in both hands. Not just in a right uppercut or a straight right or something like that.
I was noticing, like, in your last fight, and I remember watching this with Felix Trinidad and watching it with, like, Miguel Cotto, when they were, like, at 140 and 147 in the later part of their campaigns there, they weren't able to go, like, full bore through the whole fight, and they were kind of worried about meeting out energy. And then you had the draw with Peterson, and I was wondering if that was the same kind of thing, that making the weight kind of sapped you a little bit, and so you weren't able to just go full force like you used to early on in your career at 140.
No, I tell you what kept me from pulling the trigger was the simple fact that the commission switched rules in the locker room about wrapping. So they double gauzed my hands, and in the fight, I had no idea if my hands were open or if they were closed. But
wow,
you know, I could sit here and just say things on top of things all day long. At the end of the day, I didn't have to beat Lamont Peterson. I was completely astonished on the decision that the judges made. I was like, are you kidding me? in my heart and in my gut and in my mind, I knew maybe I lost 3 rounds, tops. I gave him 2, for sure. Maybe, even those are maybes. And the third one, I just gave it to him for charity. But at the end of the day, it was one of those things where I was like, wow, really? A draw? I mean, somebody even came up to me and said, if you wouldn't have pulled off that last round, you would have lost the fight. I'm like, how is that possible? I think it's absurd. It's absurd. It makes boxing look very bad.
Victor,
when
you talk about charity, a lot of folks believe that after you dropped them, you allowed them to stay in the fight. Do you think that you kind of gave them charity by allowing them to stay in there? Because a lot of folks were a little confused why you didn't press in knocking them out. What happened there?
Well, it all goes back to the wrapping. I couldn't feel my hands. I didn't know if they were open or closed. I didn't feel comfortable to release my hands, not knowing if they were open or closed. Every time I threw, I felt like I was super slow, and my coach just kept telling me to release my hands, but I was trying. I was trying to release my hands. It's just they were stuck because of no circulation. It was a very bad spot for me to be in. It was not fun at all because I know I'm a greater fighter than he is any day, and that was my off day. Imagine if I would have been on my day, I would have been like, I would have ended somebody else's career.
How much does that mess with you? If you can take us through that, what exactly happened when you're in the locker room and you're wrapping, you had your normal guy wrapping your hands and they basically just said, no, you can't do it that way? What exactly happened there?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what happened. They're wrapping me like they usually do and like I usually do in Vegas, and then all of a sudden they're like, well, no, this rookie guy of the commission says, no, the rules here state that you can only use this much, da da da. So he like completely ruined the way my coach wraps, and I'm used to getting a wrap like that. That's how they wrapped me at the gym. And then they took all tape away from me and just double gauze me.
Wow.
Using pure gauze. I never used pure gauze. And then all of a sudden, like, my hands start going to sleep, which in this point they're like 15 minutes, and I'm like, uh-oh. I told coach, maybe they're going to wake up during the fight. And adrenaline kicked in, and they never woke up. I'm like, are you kidding me? So it threw me off my game completely. But, hey, it is what it is. That was in the past. We're in the future, and I'm looking forward to fighting Berto.
You know, before we get into talking about Berto really quick, I wanted to kind of point something out, Victor, was, you know, from the beginning, I think I've known you maybe 3-4 years now, and I've followed your career, you know, all the way back when you were coming down to San Jose and stuff. And I'm kind of hearing a change of tone and personality out of you. Are you growing into who Victor Vicious Ortiz really is? I mean, because before, you kept yourself very reserved. Now I'm hearing a frustrated and pretty much, you know what, I'm just done with the BS that people keep saying about me.
You know, that's exactly it. I really have nothing to even say anymore. I mean, I've been dodged by everyone possible. I've been kept away from everybody's mouths for whatever reason. Yeah, I lost against Maidana, but I think even Maidana knows he was there by mistake, given the fact that he can't even give me a rematch. I'm just I'm finally ready to just step out of here and just say, man, screw everyone. You guys are going to believe in me? I don't really care if you believe in me or not. I'm just ready to go with this. I'm ready to capture the world championship and become world champ. I did some traveling alone, and I think that's exactly what I needed to get away from it all. I went by myself to Barbados, Hawaii, and England alone. Just I had some me time, and I kind of just figured out, hey, like, people in England respected me at all grounds, and it seems like people in U.S. can't even appreciate me a third of that, a third of a third, actually.
Right.
So I just said, man, I need to become world champion. I'm going to be world champion because this is where my heart is, you know. Like, but then again, you have those people that just judge you from just looking at you, and I just, you know, I'm just tired of it all, really,
right.
Honestly. I'm just ready to go on with my life, and I'm going to be the best that I can be.
Do you think a little bit the name Brandon Rios has kind of added to it as well?
Brandon Rios has not even crossed my mind, but if he wants to end his career, he can just step in the ring with me too.
That's a change of heart there from Vic, because I remember a while back when we had you at the gym, you know, at the open workout, you had said, you know what, he doesn't deserve a payday with me.
You know, that's exactly it. But at the end of the day, you know, it seems as though some of these fighters are just trying to run their mouth to actually become something or someone. You know, for as far back as I can remember, I mean, Rios, we grew up in the same town, same city and everything.
Right.
If it weren't for me, he wouldn't have the contract he has. I mean, at
right.
the end of the day, it's just one of those things where jealousy really did a lot of harm to him, which is why I don't really even pay attention to something like that. He's a kid. He's a little boy that's urging to become something. And in order to do so, he has to put somebody down and make himself feel good. So I just think that that's kind of funny. But at the end of the day, it's one of those things where if he wants to end his career, just bring it on, baby.
You know, when we talk about the state of boxing, you know, since Brandon has had a lot of choice of words about you, a lot of folks, including myself, I said this is like the new era of Oscar De La Hoya versus Fernando Vargas. This could be huge and really beneficial for boxing. Vic, would you, if he gets past Acosta and he says, and he's obviously going to hear this interview, and he says, you know what, I'll move up to 147. Would you take that fight next if you get past Andre Berto?
You know, I have a lot of bigger and better fights to go at, but I would definitely want a tune-up fight, so yes.
Oh,
Victor, I really like this tone that you've taken it. And
yes, me too.
a big criticism that people had with you was after the Maidana fight. You did that interview on HBO, and you said it sounded like you were questioning whether or not you wanted to keep fighting, and you were like, I think you said, you know, I don't need to take abuse like this. What is it that has changed in you that now you're saying, you know what, I do want to be a fighter, and not only that, but I want the best fights and the dangerous fights? What was it that changed?
I just, you know, there's not a whole lot that's changed. My demeanor and my hunger has always been there to be what I want to be and accomplish. But at the end of the day, when you get, you know, kids like Rios or just people like that, you know, just running their mouth, which I don't really care. That's not really me who runs their mouth. I'm just a confident person that knows that I can get the job done. But whenever I go to England and I see that Amir Khan has in every poster, every corner store, pictures of him, and I see, like, you know, talking this huge story on, I'm like, wow, man, that's pretty awesome. But come on, man, let's be real. Everybody's dodging me. I mean, for what? I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, I hit a little hard. Yes, I'm not the best-looking guy in the world. Yeah, I probably scare a few people just because of the way I hit and the way I bring a style in. But at the end of the day, hey, I just want a shot. I want to become world champion. I want to be that all-American great fighter that I know I am. And, you know, they try to toss a praise about a lot of fighters, like they're the best thing that ever walked on water since God, you know. And I'm just like, wow, I really seem to disagree there. And, it's just one of those things where I finally vacated my mind and my body and just said, I'm going to go find the roots of me for now. So I came back and I was just like, yeah, I know what I want to do. I'm going to be world champ.
Right.
I felt it when I was a kid, how bad I wanted to be a professional boxer. And next thing you know, I'm there and then a national champion 7 times. I never lost that hunger. And I don't know, I guess somewhere along the lines of the media and the Maidana and everything just kind of broke me down for a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's me in the ring, me and only me. So I'm going to be world champion, mark my words.
Let's break down Berto a little bit.
Right.
What do you see, strengths and weaknesses?
Well, you know what? Obviously, he's a great fighter because, yeah, he's world champion. He's holding the WBC. Actually, yeah, he's holding the WBC World Championship right now. So as far as that goes, yeah, he's a great fighter. He's a good fighter. I just don't seem to agree with the simple fact that he's an all-around pound-for-pound fighter, because that can't be possible because I'm the pound-for-pound fighter right now. As far as that goes, yeah, he's strong. But, hey, I'm strong as well. They say I'm smaller, yes, but I'm not the size of, like, my friend – Marquez. Like, I'm an actual 140, 147 baby. I'm strong in both hands. I'm southpaw. I mean, I don't know. I have a lot of weapons that I know I can neutralize him. So I'm ready.
Do you feel his hand speed, Victor, would be probably the first you've ever encountered, or are you looking at his hand speed at all as a factor in the belt?
No, I don't look at hand speed as a factor. I mean, I never have. Speed doesn't intimidate me. I mean, I can neutralize his speed quite well with my speed. People say I'm not as fast. I don't know. I seem to disagree on that as well. I'm pretty quick. The difference between my quickness and his is, yeah, he may be a split second faster than I am, but I'm about 10 times more powerful than he is off that 10th, so I'll be fine.
You know, when you talk about going back and looking for the roots of yourself, and then you obviously come back finding the roots of yourself, and you go after one of the big 147-pounders out there and an undefeated fighter, in some ways, Vic, to you, does it erase everything else prior of what's been going on and now put you in that pedestal or in that driver's seat to say, okay, I did something that none of you guys said I can do. Now it's my turn to start picking and choosing who should fight me next.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, bring them all. Just line them up like bowling pins. I'm going to knock them all down. I just want to get on Humberto for now.
Are you hoping and looking to try to knock him out? Is that a strategy, or your guys' game plan is to box him?
You know what? I'm looking at it all, in all aspects. I'm sure he is too. How to end it short, how to go long. I'm just ready for whatever comes my way. But at the end of the day, I'm going to have that green belt. That's my favorite color.
There's just one last thing. There's some people that are criticizing this fight. Like, I read this article by Scoop Malinowski today, and he was trashing this thing and saying that Berto's once again not fighting a real 47-pounder, but he's fighting a 140-pounder. To me, I love the fight.
Me
I
too.
Remember when Lou started mentioning that it was a possibility, I was like, please, make that fight. It's a great fight fans fight. And Victor's, you know, I saw you like probably 3 or 4 years ago at the Snake Pit, and you were working out for like a media day at the same time that Margarito was working out. And I remember thinking, that guy's a welterweight. He's not a 140-pounder. He's going to grow. And here you are now. What do you say to those critics? I mean, isn't it at the end of the day, everybody just too critical, and a good fight is just a good fight?
I just think that today that they put on an 8-ounce boxing glove and they take one right to the mouth, then answer a question. Or have the decency to give a guy credit.
Right, definitely, man. Well, I give you a lot of credit for getting in there with Berto. You know, I know Berto's been in the same boat with you as being criticized very highly and very deeply because of the choices that he's made. But when it comes to you, I don't think it's the choices that you've made and stuff, you know. I just think it's the situations that have happened, you know, in at the time of your career at the moment. But I like this fight a lot here, Victor. I got to say, I can't wait for this fight. It's actually one of the fights I'm really looking forward to of sitting down and watching. Hopefully I can be there live, man. And hopefully you walk away the victor. It'd be great to see you, you know, with your hand risen against Andre Berto and stuff. Not taking nothing away from Berto, though, you know, because I like Berto as well, too. You know, but there can only be two men to enter, and one guy has to walk away the winner.
Yes, sir. Let me correct you on that. My hands will be raised.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, a lot of people have questions, you know, hey, when is Vicious going to be back? I think we definitely found him. He is definitely back. The Vicious is there. Hey, Vic, thank you again, brother, for taking the time to speak to us, man, and hope to get you on again before the fight or after the fight.
Yes, sir. Sounds great. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care. Well, he definitely, like I said, he definitely had a lot to say. And, you know, you know, yeah, you know, you know, this is the picture I think a lot of us were looking for to hear, you know, to really see him kind of come out of his shell, you know. And I briefly had a chance to speak to his manager, Rolando, who, you know, really told me that when you have so much criticism, especially him being a young fighter, and expectations were really high on him from the get-go, when Golden Boy even signed him on, it could take a big toll on you, you know, and it could do a lot of things to a particular fighter. I've been in this business for a long time, and I've seen it just eat away a fighter where they're never the same. But sometimes pressure could be good. Sometimes that pressure can really honestly bring out the fighter in the person, you know. And I had a brief discussion with Ernesto, who's a friend, who's a co-host on Leaving the Ring, and who's heading out to Las Vegas, and we were talking a little bit, and he mentioned something really interesting. He said, when you have a name like Vicious, you have to live up to it. And that's why so many fight fans have been crucifying him, because of the fact that in the past he did fight Vicious. We forgave him from the way he talked and how he'd be so politically correct, that when he lost, the politically correct interviews outweighed what he had done in the past. He needs to be Vicious. That's what we need to see. And I think today, with this interview, and I may be wrong, fight fans will definitely tell me if I'm wrong, I think we saw a little bit of viciousness in there with him. I think we finally heard a little bit of, you know what, I'm really sick and tired of people talking about me, and I want to shut them up, and I want to fight everybody. I tell you what, it was kind of a pushback, because I really didn't think we were going to be able to get anything out of him about Brandon Bam Bam Rios, who's a friend of the show, who's been on the show numerous times, and I was told that it would be listening to the show. But he did, and it caught us off guard for a minute, but that told me, you know what, Bam Bam in some ways may have awoken a giant. How big of a giant? I don't know, because Rios is a pretty big giant himself. Gabe?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'm going up to Oxnard tomorrow to go check out Sergio Martinez and his training camp, and I'm very curious to see what Brandon has to say about being called a tuna.
a tuna or a tune-up?
Tune-up, yeah. You know, to me it wasn't even – what was interesting was the tone wasn't like, okay, now I'm decided to trash talk, kind of like the way Floyd
went
from being, you know, nice guy to now I'm just going to like go over the top and be like a wrestling guy and just talk a lot of trash. Victor just seemed like he kind of hit a personal epiphany and said, you know, enough's enough, enough of the tune-ups. And really, you know, like Lamont Peterson was not a tune-up. And, you know, Marcos Maidana might have been just too much too soon, or, you know, might have just been too much, period. But it sounded to me like he just had made an internal change, you know, and reached some things personally that, you know, like even like Andy Lee was talking about earlier, where you have that loss, and it really kind of wakes you up and makes you grow in ways that you didn't really expect and may not have grown had you not had that adversity. And, you know, I think things really, obviously have really gotten to Victor, and it's like, enough's enough. I'm tired of being called a fraud. It's not like I have been ducking people. If you really look at it, it's like he fought Marcos Maidana when nobody else really would. You know, he fought him before Amir Khan, and everybody, you know, obviously Khan beat him, so he gets the props for that. But, you know, this is not a guy that's fought easy fights all the time. You know, Lamont Peterson and Marcos Maidana are not stiffs. You know, those are tough fighters. And people, treat that draw as if it was a loss. But you really look at Lamont Peterson, and the guy's gone the distance, you know, with you know, Jim Bradley as well. He's not a slouch. You know, he's a tough young fighter who might end up just being kind of like the Obakar of his generation, where he's good enough to compete and take the elite guys to the next level, but he's not able to win, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, Jerry Quarry made a career out of being that guy. You know, he could beat certain guys, but he couldn't beat that top-level guy. Time will tell. And, you know, if you look at both careers, Berto and Ortiz, granted they're both in, you know, different divisions, you know, Berto has had maybe a tough fight or a matchup with Quintana, although it was kind of longer in the tooth at the time. But really one other fight is Louis Colazzo, who's not a big puncher, and actually hurt Berto and took him to the limit. Ortiz has been tested. Granted, he didn't pass the test both times. You know, he went the distance and arguably won, and some people think maybe he lost. That's why it was a draw. And then he lost to Maidana. But he's been, you know, at that elite level fighting tough guys, maybe a little bit longer. So it's an interesting fight. Stylistically, they match up very interesting. And we might even see with Victor, you know, any time you ask a fighter, I know you go through this, when you ask a fighter if they have trouble making weight, what's the answer? No, of course not. I can make that weight anytime.
Right.
You know, like Manny Pacquiao even said, I can get down to 106 pounds, you know, no problem. But, you know, the reality is that when you look at the body and you look at the performance, he looks like a guy that was not quite sure of letting it all go, you know, and maybe fading a little bit late, not finishing strong. With 7 more pounds to play with or 6 more pounds in this fight, we may see a rejuvenation in terms of power. We certainly might see a rejuvenation, you know, or see greater strength. You know, speed might come back. A lot of things happen physiologically, as we saw with Tito Trinidad when he looked lackluster and slow against Oscar De La Hoya, then moved up to 154, and all of a sudden there was a lot more pop, there was a lot more zip to his punches. I don't want to hear about the hand wraps. You know, you can see the weight. Actually had a nice benefit for him, and he was rejuvenated.
Right.
We might see that with Victor, and you might see a guy that has really been weighing in closer to junior middleweight than he has, you know, on fight night than he has to welterweight or even, you know, junior welterweight. We might see him be the stronger guy, or certainly a guy that's competitive. I think this is an underrated fight that could be a fight of the year candidate.
Exactly, you know, and a fight, really, honestly, I think what a lot of fight fans really have to see, too, because I do see some fight fans saying, you know, Victor has no chance with Berto. We're talking about a fighter here that's been shelved on him by himself in himself, in his management team, not having the confidence and gaining him the money that they can, you know, muster up to build themselves a star among their own circle, not a star among the fight fans, but being shelved up and having a lot of dust could sometimes be a little hurtful when you get a guy like Victor Ortiz, who's had tough oppositions, who's been matched in fairly well and built up tough and lost tough, but it's kind of been getting his way back in and kind of has that awoken giant inside of him. He may have the edge of beating a guy that may have a little bit too much dust on him because he hasn't been matched up properly and he hasn't been put to the test. He's just been holding on to a green belt that tells us he's a champion.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think he was, you know, obviously mocking Berto, saying that he was the best fighter in the world and this and that. But, he, you know, he was using the word champion when referring to Berto, and I would refrain from using that. You know, no disrespect to the guy, but a champion
right.
is somebody that fights other elite fighters, generally is one that either cleans out a division, you know, gets avoided, like, you know, by the other fighters, so maybe he can't fight them, or unifies and goes after the other guys. Even if the belts get stripped away, you know, we know who the title holders are. I don't need rankings or we won't even go down that road. But, you know, I don't need rankings to really tell me who the best guys are. You know, I knew Tim Bradley was the 140 champion when he fought, you know, Alexander.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just because he had gone a hard road. You know, granted, now Amir Khan has emerged as a threat at that weight, and so he's going to need to have to fight him in order to keep that. But to me, he's the best 140-pounder in the world. Now, Andre Berto has not done that. And he didn't even win his belt from another champion. That's another way you can find, even if the guy has one belt, if you beat the guy that's clearly the, you know, the guy in the division, then you become the guy. And, you know, Andre got it because his manager's Al Haymon. You know, Floyd Mayweather had that belt, and then he vacated it, and lo and behold, Andre Berto went in there and fought for it. And so that's how he became a title holder. He's not a champion. He's a title holder. So this won't really tell us who's the champion at 147 pounds, but it'll be an indicator of who's the guy to beat. It's a very weak division right now. You know, it's kind of spread out. We don't know if Paul Williams is going to come back and fight at that weight. You know, and then Manny Pacquiao certainly is not going to be looking to fight the winner of this fight to go pick up that belt. He'll be looking to fight probably, you know, Juan Manuel Marquez in his next fight should he, you know, beat Mosley as expected. But it'll be interesting to see the changing of the guard and to see what the winner of this does with this fight. If they live off of it for a few years, or are they going to, you know, go forward and try to do something with it, you know, and start carving some sort of campaign, you know, out for themselves, some sort of character that defines them as a champion. Because right now, Berto, you know, friendly guy, but 10 times on HBO and you've only fought Louis Colazzo and Carlos Quintana, two fighters of note, and that's it, and 10 appearances on HBO, one of the weaker welterweight reigns of all time. And you know, I'd like to see him challenge himself because it's not like he's not a quality fighter. I think there's a lot of potential in there, but there's only one way
has all the tools to really honestly shut a lot of folks up. But you know what? When those tools are just being left in the garage and not being in use, when you decide to take them out of the toolbox, guess what? If they're not oiled down, they're not going to work properly. They're going to let you down, you know, and you can't blame the tools. You have to blame the handler, the guy that has to operate the tools. But I tell you what, simmering up on leaving in the ring. We've had Brandon Rios. We had Victor Ortiz. Brandon Rios, you know, had plenty to say about Victor Ortiz. I tell you what, Brandon Rios, if he gets past Acosta, that's a very tough fight. Not a very winnable fight, in my opinion, here, Gabriel. And I think you agree with me on that one there. And a lot of fight fans out there that are listening to Leaving in the Ring, they're nodding their heads at the same time. This is a tough fight. He may not come out cleanly in this fight. He may not even come out the victor in this fight. He definitely has got to be very, very focused. Acosta is a tough, tough, tough customer and may be the leading candidate on the betting on the bet cards, you know, if anybody wants to place a bet, I think he's the leading guy for it, okay? Now, if he gets past Acosta, in however fashion, the simmering of a fight between Victor Ortiz and Brandon Rios is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Brandon Rios is a big kid. You know, at 135, how is he making it? I don't know. When I spoke to his trainer, Robert Garcia, he said, we're making it. In other words, they have to struggle to make it, but they're making it. And a lot of times, fighters that are 150-something, they struggle themselves to make a weight division, you know, so they can make enough noise. So later on, when they start building into the body, when they start growing into their body, they can move up. And that could be the case. 2 years from now, I don't think this fight will happen anytime soon. I think right now, Victor Ortiz having a shot, if it is signed, gets done deal. Andre Berto is a hell of a fight for him. You know, it's a pick'em fight. It's who shows up for that fight. But if Victor is successful, there are going to be plenty of other big things. The driving seat definitely is going to be with Victor Ortiz. But if Brandon keeps winning and keeps mauling his way through the rankings, trust me, the simmering is going to stop. It's going to be at a halt. And right now, the way Victor Ortiz is sounding, he likes that halt to be sometime soon. And I think maybe a little sooner than what Brandon Rios would want at the moment, because Brandon has to move up in weight. I think Brandon would have to go to 147. That's a pretty quick, that's two weight divisions to jump up. And if you know what, Gabe, if we know Brandon, he's crazy enough to say, I'll jump up. I don't need to test myself. I'll jump up. I'll fight Victor. And that might be a bad move for him.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. And you know, to kind of call him out and when you're moving up in weight, you know, I don't know. It is what it is. But to sit there and say that this fight, you know, it's kind of had some attraction when they were both, like, you know, 5 pounds away from each other. But I think, you know, Top Rank and Brandon have kind of divergent paths right now, Ortiz and Brandon have paths that are going in opposite directions. And let's not forget, you know, they're with two different promoters who don't work with each other. So we're probably not going to see that fight. You know, sometimes the fighters want something and then the promoters go, yeah, that's great and everything, but we got this other plan for you. And I think that Brandon's going to cement his legacy at 135 before he makes any other move, you know, without
I think
question.
So too. Yeah, I think so too, and I think that's exactly what his team would want him to do. But that stake that's dangling there, if Victor decides to leave it outside and say, come here, little doggy. I'm tired of you bark. Let's now get down to the biting. Maybe enough for Rios to say, you know what? I'm going to bam bam this dude. And we know the hatred is there. It's not really bad blood. I think that's more than bad blood. This is some poison blood. There's a virus in this blood between these two young men. And I like to see it simmer down, simmer up more. Just because of the fact that it would be a bigger attraction, a little down the line. We saw exactly what happened with Alexander and Bradley when we asked for it a little too soon. And it didn't even meet to any of the imaginations that we wanted. I think that fight would have been great on 3D. It would have been more entertaining. Seeing the headbutt, seeing Timothy Bradley's big old head coming right at you, then maybe you would understand what Devon Alexander was going through.
Yeah, that's definitely not something I want to see in 3D.
You end up with a black guy. How do you explain that, you know what I mean, to the old lady or going to work? You know, where'd you get that black guy? Oh, man, I was watching Timothy Bradley on 3D. That's it. 3D goes back to Best Buy. No more 3D.
Anyways, this kid. It's like that movie Bachelor Party, where the fight breaks out in a movie theater where they're watching 3D, and the guy says, this 3D is pretty amazing. And the woman's like, nah, not really. And then a punch misses and hits her dead in the face. She's like, wow, it really is great, you know?
Yeah, really. I feel like I'm actually there. I'm in it, you know? And definitely, I think, Timothy Bradley, you might want to have to get in on that, brother. You might have to put up a contract. You know, that's a good move right there. Get yourself on the 3D thing. Be the premier guy, the feature guy for 3D. Big old head, Timothy Bradley, the bobblehead, Timothy Bradley and stuff. Anyways,
well, really, Manny Pacquiao should do it. Maybe his fights would actually be worth it.
All you're going to see is hair. Hair and music and everything. We don't want that, man. We definitely don't want that.
Might actually make the fight worth watching, at this point. Considering the fight that he's taking.
Oh, man.
You gotta do something.
Or either that or see Roger Mayweather talk stuff with no teeth.
I'm good. I'm good.
I know.
I don't need that in 3D.
Let's go to the fight schedule before we get ourselves in trouble and stuff, because we've done that plenty of times. We upset it, some fight fans out there, when we joke around here on Leave It in the Ring and stuff. Go with the fight schedule real quick, Gabe.
Okay, just one second as I pull it up on my tabs here. And we are at February 18th, Friday, at the Sport Park Arena in Slovenia. Let's just say that. Jan Zavec, 30-1 versus Paul Delgado. 25-9-1. This is for the IBF welterweight title. I'm going to probably go with the favorite here. I haven't seen much of Paul Delgado. I think I've seen one fight, but it seems to me that, you know, it's in Slovenia. I think the judges are going to see it one way. At the Wicomico Civic Center in Salisbury, Maryland, on ESPN2 in 3D, Fernando Guerrero, 20-0 versus Derek Findlay. 17-4. I'm going with Guerrero on this one. I think, you know, he probably stops him late. It seemed to me that they're really punching with a lot more power. That was the other thing that Andrew Cancel said, is they're learning how to punch through the target, not just meeting the target like an amateur would to score a point, but really shooting through it and doing some damage. Underneath that in support, you have Sean Porter, 17-0, versus Andis Ajahu, 25-4. Porter's looking really good right now. Steve Kim has a full feature on him and his father up on MaxBoxing.com right now as our lead. In support of that, Dennis Duglin, the mama's boy, versus Joel Carrasquillo, 14-17-1. Gee, I wonder who's going to win that fight. Underneath that is Dominic Wade, 10-0, versus Grover Young, 4-0. Over on Telepatura that same night at the Longshoreman Hall, in San Francisco, California, we have Eloy Perez, 19-0-2, versus Roger
I think you fell off.
Whoa, can you
hear me? That's how much of a mismatch that is, that your phone lost reception for a little bit, because it's even disgusting.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Go ahead, brother.
I'm on AT&T commercial now. Telefutura? Mercito No Mercy Gesta, 20-0-1. Tentatively against Hinaro Trozancos, 22-13-1. But we'll keep you up to date and put out a bulletin. I'm sure I'll leave it in the ring or on Max Boxing or both when that opponent changes. Carlos Quintana in Puerto Rico is coming back into action, 27-3 versus Ishmael Tate, 21-6-2. And this is one for the commissions to take a nice long look at. At Club Atletico Adelio Maria in Argentina, at the Estadio Manuel Echeverria in Navajoa, Mexico, Luis Yori Boy Campos, 15-1 versus, drumroll please, Matt Vanda, 43-12.
Wow.
I don't know the Spanish words for it, but it's known as the mediocre bowl. I'm probably going to go with,
Mierda.
I'm just speechless. Underneath that is Juan Estrada, 17-0, versus Jorge Cardenas, 16-11-4. It's probably going to safe to say that the drug wars is going to be the only carnage happening that night. Let's just jump to good fights. On February 19th, Saturday, Mandalay Bay Casino, Las Vegas, Nevada, Fernando Montiel, 44-2-2 versus Nonito Donaire, 25-1. This is for the WBC and WBO bantamweight belts. In support of that is Mike Jones, 23-0.
Mike Jones!
Should be 23-1 versus Jesus Soto Carras, 24-5-3. In support of that is Mike Alvarado, and he'll be fighting. He's 28-0 versus Dean Harrison. Mark Mulligan versus 20-2 versus Gabriel Martinez, 27-1-1. And Mickey Bay rounds out that card, 16-0 versus Jose Hernandez, 10-4.
Mickey Bay's back, huh? It's been a while.
I guess so. At Porsche Arena in Stuttgart, Germany, Felix Sturm, 34-2-1 against not very deserving Ronald Hearns, 26-1. Gee, I wonder how that happened. WBA middleweight belt is on the line, although it's pretty clear from the opposition as well as the reluctance that he is not a champion. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
You know...
Yes.
I don't even know what else to say about it. I mean, how many times did we got to repeat ourselves to, wow, that's just.
I mean, if you really look at the schedule, you can just keep going, you know, like the negative, the dark side. There's a fight at the Memorial Hall in Kansas City, Missouri,
right.
At the Show Me State, apparently.
You know,
Jeremiah
Graziano,
13-0 versus Jesse Davis, 11-20-1.
You know, and this is the thing, too, is that we normally try to stay very positive here on Leaving in the Ring because we're a vehicle of advertising the sport of boxing, okay, where we formed this show to give boxing coverage the way we feel that it's needed to be done, okay? But at times, we have to have a breakdown. We have to reevaluate ourselves. And one time somebody had asked me, you know, Dave, you know, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to fix boxing? I said, that word fix is just so overrated in boxing now. There's really, honestly, let's just have a intervention, you know, with boxing. So on Leaving the Ring, this is just we're just an intervention, a bunch of fight fans that get together, we talk boxing, and we air it out, and then we go back into watching it, and then we come back and talk about the good stuff, and then we have an intervention and say, blah, 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 blah. But in all reality, we know there's never going to be a total change out of it. There's never going to be a complete change in the sport. But if we can make a dent as fight fans, if we can just make something, a little bit of a change, and I think we kind of did that with the Marcito, you know, fight where when they came on, that name, Gennaro, was on there. Immediately after, a few days later, I think, 2 days after them being done, it was removed, you know? So maybe we made a dent. You know, we don't want to try to take the credit, but it makes you wonder. When you do a little bit of bitching, it eventually, I think eventually, kind of not breaks the wall down, but maybe chips a hole so they can see a little peeping eye that's there saying, hey, I see you. I see you. And that's definitely what fight fans have to say is we do see what is going on. We do see blah, 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 blah. We do that, blah. You know, we do see what's going on.
Well, that's the thing, you know, is that you got to look at it. You know, like somebody was saying, you know, I know you had gotten it from a source, and I got it later on in the day, that basically, you know, because of some media pressure is what they called it.
Right.
There was a lot of people really dogging the fight, and I was looking around, and, you know, I know the Cruelest Sport had really great website people should check out, Carlos Acevedo. He had written about the Dennis Sharp mismatch, as I did, and written about a few others, the James Toney fight that's happening, and the guy Damon Reed that he's fighting. He'd actually lost to a guy that had a bunch of fixed fights on his record. It's a prevalent problem, and the thing is that it's not just the California Commission. There are other commissions, like I said, you know, in the world. In the U.S. last year, the last 6 months of 2010, there was 28 suspended fighters that were allowed to fight. 9 of them happened in California. In 12 other commissions around the world, there was at least one fighter that was on suspension in that six-month period that was allowed to fight. This fight actually might be, the one I'm about to mention, might be the winner for the worst fight in a long, long, long time. This one's happening in Belgium. This is happening between Christophe Dufault and Jesse Moreau. Now, Dufault is 6-1, and he's had two knockouts. He's had one loss, and it was a stoppage loss. Now, the guy he's fighting, Jesse Moreau, he is 7-23. He's been knocked out
God.
Four times. He's got three losses, but the worst part is only have four knockouts. You know, he's like 33 years old. He hasn't fought since 2005. Now, if you look at his record, this is ridiculous. You know, he lost his first two fights, won one, lost another, draw, he had a win, then a loss, then a win, then five losses in a row, a win, a loss, a win, a couple draws, three losses, win, three losses, win.
So, in other words, he hasn't had hiccups. He's had some heartburns.
Yeah, yeah. Seven losses in a row from 2003 to 2005. His last one was a loss by TKO. He had two TKO losses in a row.
Right.
And here he is fighting in Belgium. You know, and these are all fights that happened overseas. These were all like some of them were in the UK. Mainly they were in France, a couple in Italy and Poland and Belgium and Germany.
Right.
But this is a guy, you know, if you did any job and you failed this much at it, at some point somebody would have to tell you, maybe this isn't for you. You know, maybe like you should go be a singer or something, because boxing, not so much. But this guy's allowed to fight. And you got to wonder, you know, it's kind of backwards. It's happening in Belgium. Like, did somebody just pay somebody off and said, I need to get this guy a win? You know, what can you do for me? I got to round out my card. I mean, you just got to wonder – how the hell this fight is actually taking place. And, you know, somewhere...
How many deaths? That's what I want to know, Gabriel. How many deaths do you need on your resume for you to resign, or for somebody to point something out that, hey, you're not doing very well because you had two deaths this year? One more is going to cost you a write-up. So you better watch yourself, buddy. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. You know, we're making a joke about that right now, but if you really look at it, man, this is kind of sad that these people were playing God. And Aztec, you put that we can be heard more than you guys. No, we can't. Because without you guys tuning in and listening to Leaving the Ring and going on Leaving the Ring website and Max Box and sending them emails and keeping the numbers at a steady pace, the promoters and managers and matchmakers and et cetera, the people that are down the line wouldn't hear us. They would be like, it's just a couple of two guys on a block talk radio. But they're looking at it as the numbers of fans that are coming on. Numbers of fans that are basically saying the same thing. I'm you. You're me. Trust me. You know, look in the mirror, Aztec. Look in the mirror, Peter. Look in the mirror, Sarah, Superhands, Tailby. All the people that are in the chat room and all the people that are not just tuning in, listening. Look in the mirror and you see Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya. We're all the same. We're brothers and sisters all in the same circle because we're fight fans and we give a damn about this sport. We actually care because we're consumers. We're people that wake up thinking and want to see boxing. We want to look into the forums. We want to check out the websites. We want to get on YouTube or we want to get on streams and just watch, rewatch, replays of fights. How many of us wake up and say, you know what, I'm going to pop in, I don't know, let me see, a fight that happened in 1985, you know? Or, you know what, I never saw this guy fight Joe Lewis. Well, I never saw Jack Johnson, so I decided to go back on YouTube or look for it somewhere so I can tune in and watch it. See, it's us. They depend on numbers. That's the only way you make a movement is by numbers. So I honestly think that everybody that tunes in and listens to us, because you honestly are giving us a lot more for us to talk about and to say, and for people to hopefully listen. If not, it's okay, man, because we had 3 hours of boxing talk, and that's what we do here on Leaving in the Ring. We crack open a beer, we sit back, we relax, and we do what we love most. We don't get paid for this. We just do it because we like getting on the radio show and chopping it up with guys like you guys that are out there, because that's what makes – that's the perks of it. That's the fun. That's where we get our high, and our, you know, where we want to do this every Thursday and stuff. Talk to fighters, but hear what fight fans got to say, because we have a lot of similarities. We may not agree all the time, and we may get pissed at each other, you know, but we don't go outside and rob a store and burn down a house. We just piss at each other and stuff when we start spanning each other out.
That's the thing, you know, I had somebody, and actually, I do rob places and burn down houses, but but only the CSAC. So actually, I had a few people kind of tell me, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, man. You know, this is the way fighters are built, and you're just a pencil neck geek, and that you've never really been in a fight, and which isn't true. I've never been in. That really matter if I have or not. It's common sense. When you think about these fighters and you take a look at what's happening with them, somebody's got to look out for them because it's hard to look out for them.
I'm going to break it up really bad, brother. I just got to tell you that right now. And I think we lost Gabriel before he could make his point and stuff, you know, but like I said, you know, just to add on a little bit more, I'm reading, you know, I always get distracted reading what everybody's got to say either on Twitter or Facebook or on, you know, in the chat room and stuff. And I can tell everybody, if you want to send us something here on Leaving the Ring at leavingtheringgmail.com, you're more than welcome. You know, you want to put in your 2 cents because you weren't available on the times that we air to call in and speak to us. Not a problem and stuff. I know we've been promising about doing a mailbag. We're just trying to get around to it. We did buy the toll-free number. I know some folks were wondering if that was going to be legit for this show. I know I said we would, but they told us that we have to wait for a 2-week period before we can get the number. Okay, so as soon as that number comes in, we'll be posting it. It'll be a toll-free number. So every caller can call in and not worry about the bill, because the fact that we know this is a trying time for a lot of us because of this recession around the whole world and all that. But we're trying to do as much as we can to try to help out the fight fans that right now are not working and you know, that just make it a little bit more convenient, because, like I said, when you tune in, you are definitely helping us out as well as keeping this sport of ours that we love dearly alive, you know. And I think it's time to go, man. I think this is the end of the show, and I appreciate everybody supporting us and listening on in and emailing us. Be sure to go and check out Leaving the Ring at leavingtheringgmail.com. Check out the articles. Make sure you go on there and you check out the articles and stuff. And, you know, Gabe's back on, so let him speak his piece really quick before we go off the air. Hey, Gabe.
Hey. I was sitting there ranting and raving. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. I'm not on the radio. Well, somebody was, I'm not sure exactly where I got cut off. Thank you, AT&T. But somebody was basically criticizing me, saying that I didn't know what I was talking about when it came to building fighters. And for me, it's about fighter safety. You know, these guys, more often than not, get taken advantage of, especially at the lower level. And for me, that's all I'm really saying is, you know, mismatches are going to happen. There's going to be guys that are going to be fed to the bigger guys, and I know that's how it's built. You know, that's how it's done. And it's been that way for forever. You know, but at some point you got to look at the at these guys and say, one, what is your fighter getting out of it? And two, you know, what is the consumer getting out of it? Who wants to go to a show where everything's preordained, where you know that the Christians are going to be fed to the lions? You know, I want to see fights where, you know, guys are being built, you know, against guys that at least have some sort of chance on some level, where they have boxing ability, or maybe they're kind of slow, but they've got power, or maybe they're just really speedy and kind of awkward. Something that, that really makes it so that what you're seeing is actually a contest, not just a slaughter. You know, and the goal is, well, nobody's ever knocked this guy out. Let me see if I can knock him out, you know. That,
right.
That, to me, isn't really that exciting. And basically what I encourage people to do in the mailbag, I kind of I didn't have any naysayers in there. It was somebody in another venue. But basically what I told people was, here's the thing. You know, when you look at these guys that are kind of built soft, when they finally get to a point where it's time to step up, a lot of times they end up losing. And so, one, you're not building great fighters. You're building records. And there's a huge difference. You know, like if you really look to if you really look at like Top Rank, who's got a really nice track record of building good fighters as well as good records and building draws, that's really the way to do it. You know, it benefits the consumer more often than not. I mean, we look at the big fights and go, man, he doesn't fight. We want him to fight. But if you look at, by and large, the percentage of the fighters under that banner, they're built the right way. These other things, it's kind of like what I call like the, you know, like the box wrecking of the sport, or and it's kind of a fast-forward way, a microwave way of building a fighter. And so what I encourage people to do is don't just rely on me or Carlos Acevedo or yourself, this radio show, to be your voice. The consumer can speak for themselves. And, you know, I encourage people, you can go on any of the commission's websites. Most of them have them. Or you can track down their address on the Internet. Everything's right there. It has a list of who the commissioners are. It has a list of the people. You can call up and find out who it is, whose name it is that approves these bouts. And if you see something that's horrible, it's kind of your responsibility as a boxing fan, as a consumer, to, you know, and just a citizen, to write into them, send them an email, call them, and ask them, you know, why is this fight being made? This is a slaughter. I don't want to see this, you know.
Right.
But, you know, if more and more people step up and say something and become a voice collectively, then things will change. But as long as you're kind of relying on me to do it, or you to do it, or one other guy to do it, it's going to be, it makes my job harder, because then I'm just one guy screaming in the dark, as opposed to, you know, a guy that's kind of, you know, saying, yeah, look at all these fans saying this, and I'm saying it too, and what's more, I'm going to print your name and say that you're responsible for this. And when somebody gets hurt, you're the one that approved this fight, and you ignored the fact that he was on suspension, and yet you let him fight. Now he's got brain damage, he's in the hospital. What are you going to do for that guy's family? What are you going to do for him? You know, to me, it's a criminal act. You're breaking the law.
Definitely.
You know, granted, maybe not. He wasn't suspended in your jurisdiction. He was somewhere else. So what I would say is, you know, go on, do a Google search of the California State Athletic Commission or the Texas Athletic Commission. Find out their contact information. Send them, you know, look up the cards. Go on Fight Facts. Go on Box Rec. Do your research and write in yourself. Do it as well. I'm going to keep doing it every week.
And you know what?
I'm going to post something up, but people should do it too.
Yeah, and Fight Fans, if you do that, please send us a copy of the letter and all that, and then we'll post it as well on Leaving in the Ring, and we'll send it to Gabriel so he can put it in his mailbag to show, hey, look, you know, Fight Fans, we're doing exactly what we need to do to get things on track and stuff. Really quick, want to give a shout out to Danny Swift Garcia, as 140 himself. He's going to be fighting February 25th. Hey, there's your shout out, brother. Bring it home. Again, Gabriel, it's always great. It's always a pleasure, man. And I enjoyed the show. I hope everybody out there that was tuning in and listening to Leaving in the Ring, they enjoy this show as well and stuff. We really appreciate the feedback from everybody. And like I said, please support Leaving in the Ring. Go to the website. Please support Noche de Boxeo. check out the website. Even if you don't speak Spanish, you probably know somebody that does speak Spanish, and they need an outlet as well. They're fight fans. They need to be able to express themselves, you know, in Spanish and listen to interviews, you know, exclusive interviews, okay? I don't know whether or not if there's any other Spanish radio shows out there and stuff. You know, we're not trying to take anybody out or try to be number one in this and that, but we're just trying to do our part in the sport of boxing and stuff. So please, please support everything that you see in boxing, not just our stuff, but anything else that is in boxing that is involved in stuff. We support everybody, even though some guys don't like us for whatever reason is. But hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles and stuff. This is your boy 97 Rough David Dwarfs, and your host Gable Montoya on Leaving the Ring. Till next Thursday, brothers and sisters, you guys all have a good night.
Yeah, no, thanks for tuning in, everybody, and you know, finally, just kind of on a personal note, it's kind of odd. Found out about an hour before the show, I lost a good friend of mine, passed away. Was somebody who was instrumental early on, encouraging me as a writer, and up in Sacramento. And I just wanted to send out condolences to his family. And Ted Gould, you will be missed. And fight fans, I'll see you next week.
I'm sorry to hear about that, Gabriel. All right,
yeah,
brother.
It's a bummer.
Take care.
Take care, folks.
All right.